It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Owen J.J. Stone, O-Doctor, is here with Mike Elgin. There's lots to talk about, including the little-known origins of Cyberpunk 2077. We'll talk about Amazon's amazing growth this year, Comcast reimposing internet caps, boo hiss, and a college student who created a massively popular TikTok about paint mixing and then got fired. It's all coming up next on Twit. This Week in Tech comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company does not have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 799, recorded Sunday, November 29th, 2020. Don't tweet the fleet. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Barracuda. Did you know 91% of all cyber attacks start with an email? To uncover the threats hiding in your Office 365 account, get a secure and free email threat scan at barracuda.com/twit. And by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Get 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com/twit. And by Forward Networks. Forward Networks reduces business risk by revolutionizing the way large networks are managed. Their advanced software delivers a digital twin of your network, a completely accurate mathematical model in software. Get a demo at forwardnetworks.com/twit. And by ExpressVPN. Your data is your business. Protect it with ExpressVPN. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/twit. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. And I have assembled a fine panel of tech journalists to help us dissect the week's news. On the left here, on my left, O-Doctor Owen J.J. Stone. And really, the only reason you're here, Owen J.J. Stone, this week is because you own a PS5. And I'm just so jealous.
I am one of the coveted few.
A few, the proud, the PlayStation 5 owners. So it's great to have you. Also to my right, Mr. Mike, not politically, just, well, maybe you're a little to my right, politically.
Unlikely.
Unlikely.
Possibly.
Mike Elgin.
You're right. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
He's back from
Representing
Oaxaca.
Representing the people who don't own PS5s.
You and I.
Perspective.
Two out of the three. Actually, Georgia Dow was scheduled to be here. She's a little under the weather. We hope she'll feel better soon. I don't believe it's COVID. I think it's a piece of bad turkey. Actually, no, she's Canadian. Their Thanksgiving was last month. There's no excuse. Yeah. No excuse at all. So you came back from Mexico. You've been in Oaxaca for the last few months. I've been watching your pictures of beautiful food and people and a beautiful city. I'm so jealous. What was the COVID situation down there, though? I was worried about
it. It was amazing. You know, it's like everybody's watching the distance and wearing masks. And the great thing about Oaxaca, it felt like July, Leo. It was summery.
Yeah.
All the restaurants have no roofs. They're sort of like these little open area restaurants. So you go through the door and you're like outside again in like a courtyard. And the tables are all far apart and it's easy to maintain distance. And we had an entire compound to ourselves. And so we just didn't make physical contact with anybody. And we did a lot of social things, but everybody's super aware of it. So it's just great. And there are almost no cases in the city.
Oh, that's so nice. Mexico has been hard hit, I know.
Oh, Mexico certainly has. But the mostly northern Mexico, the indigenous areas are super good. So the indigenous groups sort of like wall it off and they govern it themselves and try to avoid people coming and going.
It's the tourists, of course, that are the problem, isn't it? Yeah.
It is. But it was, you know, Oaxaca is just so, so amazing and so much fun. And it was a great place to shelter in place. Unfortunately, you know, we came back for the holidays and all that stuff. Otherwise, we would have just stayed there indefinitely. Beautiful.
A few Christmases ago, spent the Christmas week at Puerto Escondido, which is the, mm-hmm. in the province of Oaxaca, but it's on the ocean. Beautiful area. Really love it. Sayulitas is there, the great surfing spot. And it was, we had it all to ourselves. The beach was kind of empty until the day after Christmas. And then 1,000 buses filled with Oaxaqueños came and basically moved in. And apparently the week after Christmas is the week not to be on the beach in Mexico, because everybody
learned it the hard way.
Everybody came. But I love it. And the food is great in Oaxaca because it's South American, a lot of fresh fish, really amazing food. And I'm sure your wife Amira went crazy because it's kind of her style of cooking.
Absolutely. And in fact, we spent Day of the Dead with an indigenous Zapoteco friend of ars who we were the only like foreigners within like 150 miles. And we just walked around their village and we did some cooking together. We ate a lot of stuff. We did all the Day of the Dead stuff. She ritually purified us with incense.
Oh, wow.
And it was amazing. But the thing about Oaxaca State is that 50% of the population is indigenous. And so this is one of the reasons the food culture is so various and traditional. They barely have bread. They're super tortilla forward.
Yeah.
A lot of fresh stuff. And in the case of our Zapoteco indigenous friend, they literally grow or raise every bite they take, like everything. They raise animals. They raise.
So
they grow their own corn.
Yeah.
It's just an amazing food culture.
And then there's Owen J.J. Stone, who spent Thanksgiving on his amazing 18-function grill making barbecue. It looks like macaroni. And what did you make here? This looks so good.
It was great. I put it all in the smoker. It took 2 hours, an hour to prep. An hour in the smoker, we were eating by 1 o'clock. Then we got to reeat at 5 o'clock. Then we got to reeat at 9 o'clock. It was amazing. Because if you put a turkey in there, turkey takes forever.
Yeah, this is turkey meatloaf, it looks like, or something.
Turkey meatloaf. Yes, turkey breast. And the meatloaf.
Mac and cheese. Oh, that looks good.
Unlike you guys, I haven't left my house. I forget what traveling's like. I don't know. I've ventured to PA a couple times, like to the Amish country, the Amish markets. But other than that, y'all,
I got up at 8 a.m. to put a turkey in the Traeger, but it was really, really good. It was best. Lisa said that's the only way we're going to do it from now on.
I was scared to do it. I had no time. It was just I figured it'd be an easy year.
Fine. You did fine. I also see, as I'm looking at your Insta, as the kids say, that you've been having some fun here with your Miles Morales and your...
I promise I'm paying attention to the show today.
I am. I want to point you to an article, actually. You know, if I could, I would have bought anything, an Xbox Series X, a PS5, anything. But scalpers and Owen J.J. Stone beat me to it. How'd you get one?
You want to know what's going to make... See, I was going to hope you didn't ask me that because it's going to make you really upset. Do you know how I got one?
How?
The internet scam of America right now is for people to have a friend that works at a Best Buy or anywhere to get the PS5s off of a truck, right?
Yeah.
And now what they do is all of your like popular Instagrammers or Twitter people are raffling off PlayStations and things like that, right? So I bought a raffle ticket for $25 and I won a PS5.
Oh, I'm going to kill you.
Now, this person I know for a fact, because you can see what number order you're in, they're making $4,500 per PS5. They're making like $5,000 per raffle.
That's why you can't get one, though, because
that's why you can't get one.
It's
this raffle thing this is the new scam right now. The raffle thing is amazing. Some people do it for $50 and they take less entries, but they're still it's more than eBay or anything else. And you know what the cutest thing about that is? On top of that scam, there's a double scam of, if you just get one PS5, you take a picture of yourself with it, you do the raffle. If you have a big enough following, you make $5,000. Then you just go buy one off of eBay for $1,000 and have it drop shipped to the winner. So for $4,000, you never even touched a PS5. You just paid $5,000. I'm just telling people this is what the scam is.
We have Owen on a regular basis to give us the latest street scams.
Hey, look. All right. Scamazon. I mean, I can tell you all about the Scamazon scams, but this scam, $25 holla. I was over here like.
You won, though, so you're good, you know.
I'm a lucky duck.
I kept, you know, Walmart says, you know, Thursday, we're going to get some at noon. And, or Target, you know, and I'm on there. And, everybody, I then go to Reddit and everybody goes, thanks a lot, nothing for nothing, Walmart. I don't know. I just, it's all right.
Every store gets two. You can wait till after Christmas.
I'm going to be fine. Just, well, what I wanted it for.
$1,000 off of eBay.
Was right now. The hot game, I think, of the year, maybe of the decade. It, you know, a lot of times these overhyped hot games end up being terrible. But I'm very excited about Cyberpunk 2077. Starring Keanu Reeves, but that's not why, why I'm excited about it. But it's coming out December 10th, and I'm going to play it not on a PlayStation 5, not on an Xbox Series X. I'm going to play it on my new my real pride and joy, my new Macintosh MacBook Pro 13. How, you may ask, Leo? How could you possibly play that game? It'll be interesting. Owen's doing an impression of how the game is going to look. So it's Stadia. It's the Google Stadia, which is their streaming game playing platform. They are offering a pre-order for Cyberpunk 2077. Chrome is native on the M1. Chrome 87 has actually been compiled for Apple's platform. And I'm hoping, I'm thinking I'm plugging into the Ethernet. You know, I have a gigabit service. Maybe this will be good.
I'm joking. It'll be fine. I mean, you'll just be a low grade fine, but you'll be fine.
A low grade fine.
It's like, yeah,
better than nothing. Look, you know, Owen, I'm just trying to, you know, make some lemonade out of this lemon.
I understand. Cyberpunk.
Really interesting article. I did not know this. You probably did. You're a serious gamer. In the Atlantic this month, about a guy named Mike Pondsmith, who created Cyberpunk in 1988, but he didn't write a novel. He didn't write a book. He wrote a bunch of games, role-playing games, Dungeons and Dragons-type games. There are now 50 books, more than 5,000 pages. According to The Atlantic, it's one of the most extensively and fastidiously imagined worlds in fiction. And it is the inspiration for Cyberpunk 2077, which I had no idea. I should have known.
Wait, what? That's a thing?
That's a thing.
I've got a game, Uncle Leo. I've got a game. It's written out. It's a book this thick. I've got sketches, layouts. It's called Hustle World. I'm about to go sell my book.
You need Hustle World.
If they can, oh man, I you know what? Because I'm never going to do it, and I don't know anybody, so I just put it out there so somebody wants to contact me.
Hustle World. Hustle World. I think it'd be huge.
You get to be a cop, so you go up through the police ranks, or you get to be a street person, you go up through the ranks, and each place has like a mafia, and then the cops are trying to take down the mafia, and then you can have people that are spies in the mafia, or you could go if you're really smart, you send your kid to go work in a police force, and then he helps you scam and get stuff in, but it's a whole thing about hustling, and you can either be on the good side or the bad side. Sometimes you're corrupt on both ends.
Did you ever play tabletop games? Did you ever do that, Mike or Owen? Did you ever do that?
I know. Tabletop games, yeah. I mean, I gave up video games generally 20 years ago when I became a workaholic. But
that's a sad story.
I'm seriously.
I'm taking up video gaming now that I don't work much anymore. Now that I'm a podcaster, I'll be playing more video games.
Cyberpunk 2077 looks like something that might bring me back in. Especially since it will be available on the Mac that I'm going to be buying. So
there you go.
I love the cyberpunk genre. Back in the 90s, like I was super into the cyberpunk music culture. Back then it was like super raw, like super, super raw. And I used to love that stuff, but I sort of moved on from that as well. But I still love the whole cyberpunk aesthetic. And in fact, I really love, I'll admit it, the cyberpunk subreddit, which is full of like mostly fan-based imagery that's very cyberpunkish. And I also love, I think it was Mercedes or BMW, one of the big motorcycle manufacturers, just came out with a cyberpunk-style scooter.
Yeah.
Which looks so cool.
Get ready, because Cyberpunk is going to be back, baby.
Well, I mean, this is our world. 2020 is the most cyberpunk year ever.
Yeah.
So
this is the subreddit you were talking about. And it started with Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash, which has perhaps the best first chapter in science fiction history. It goes downhill from there, but it's got a great first chapter. And I'm a huge Neal Stephenson fan, but everybody, even Neal Stephenson fans admit he has a hard time finishing stories. And then, of course, William Gibson's Neuromancer is perhaps the pinnacle of cyberpunk literature.
1984.
Brilliant.
I believe it was written in.
So this guy...
He was behind back in when ICQ was done, back in my ICQ days.
ICQ.
I used to play those kind of games. I was so deep into fantasy. I was a vampire. I was a warlock. I was
So could you play ICQ, Dungeons & Dragons, over ICQ? I guess you could.
Not so much that, but you'd find friends that were into that, and then that's what got me into it, because I was so much into the whole role-playing lore and worlds and stuff that people were creating. And I was like, they're like, oh, there's a game you can play. I'm like, well, what game is that?
So. This is the Cyberpunk 2077 phone from OnePlus.
Today I'm cracking open the
Cyber. It's an unboxing of the 8T. I don't know what makes it so cyberpunk. So... I suspect we're going to see, especially in this kind of dystopian world we live in now, a resurgence of cyberpunk over the next year. Get ready. But you can trace it back to some degree to this guy. Let me read you this a paragraph from this Atlantic profile. Again, this is a black man named Mike Pondsmith who wrote all this stuff. Pondsmith, now in his 60s, has been known to wear his own cyberpunk uniform, black leather jacket, black jeans, motorcycle boots, mirror shades. That's kind of the thing.
Classic.
Today at home.
And a Japanese sword.
Yeah, right. Today at home in the suburbs of Seattle, he's in a black T-shirt and regular spectacles. It's fitting we're speaking over Zoom, the kind of now ubiquitous telepresence technology that felt futuristic in Blade Runner in 1982. But here's the quote. Writing, Pondsmith tells me, is a lot like basically eating a pound of dough, a whole pepperoni, a couple of pounds of mozzarella, and a bunch of spices, then throwing up a pizza.
He's right. I've literally done that.
His oeuvre, which is, again, tabletop D&D gaming, is published by a company called R. Talsorian Games, and a Polish video game developer, CD Projekt Red, contacted them in 2012 about adapting the Cyberpunk D&D games for this game, Cyberpunk 2077. So I thought it'd be worth mentioning this guy, Pondsmith, because he deserves credit for what we're all about to enjoy. Me in 12 frames per second splendor.
I'm totally joking. I don't want Apple fanboys to hate on me. It's gonna be good.
I think it's a good test.
Not putting on a Google Nest or anything like that. If you're putting on a new little Google stream, and then we'd have a problem.
But so I got my M1 on Tuesday or Monday, I guess. So I've had it for a little less than a week. I got the MacBook Pro 13-inch maxed out, 16 gigs. That's all you can get at the top. 2 terabyte SSD. It's fast. It's really fast. As long as you're running, it's fastest if you can run native apps, and those are few and far between. All of Apple's stuff is updated, and then the hardcore Apple developers, people like Cable Sasser at Panic Software, are quickly pushing out M1 universal binaries. I think iTerm, the terminal program I use, is. So there's that layer of, these are optimized for it. And they really, they launch instantly. Microsoft Office, the beta is available. I think Microsoft is not never going to do anything too snappy on a Mac platform, but it's available. And then there's a second layer, which is stuff that is running in emulation under Rosetta 2. And when you run your first Rosetta 2 x86 application, it installs Rosetta. It takes a while. The first time any application runs, it cranks through it so that it can do a just-in-time, an advanced compilation of some of it, so it'll run faster. This only happens once at the beginning. And those run pretty well. But what people don't talk about, you were talking, Owen, about the fact that there's no discrete GPU, there's no you know, it doesn't have ray tracing. It doesn't have, you know, a Xeon with 18 cores or anything. So, but for what it is, it's extremely snappy.
For what it is amazing.
What the hell is that on your forehead? Is that an apple?
It's my apple sticker.
I have a notch haircut, but I'm covering it up with my bangs.
Yeah. I did just buy, I bought a Mac Mini. Mine comes in January.
Oh, good. Though. Oh, good. I think you're going to like it.
I'm absolutely going to love it. Like I said, I do a lot of quick edits from my R5 on my Pro. I actually sold one of my Pros to buy the Mac Mini because I have two Pros. I don't need two Pros.
We should say iPad Pro. So that's iPad Pro. That is the kind of prototype A14 chip for the M1 that was running in the desktop.
And it was one of the first things that I could put my 8K on, not raw, but I could put 8K on from my camera and just like how people show you in their little YouTube videos, it just streams and it plays the minor stutter. Whereas my Beast machine, I had to run proxies to run the 8K raw. So I was already impressed with that. And then once it dropped, I was like, all right, I know I have to get one. Again, to what I said earlier before we started the show, not for like movie making stuff, but for regular people, for YouTube people, for like on a budget people, this thing is game changing. Like for if you get $700, you can get the base model of a mini and you could be in there like swimwear without headaches and processing power or editing. The editing videos alone part of it is amazing. And if you're a photographer, you make audio, it's just going to be it's just butter. Like they've created a huge problem in the market.
If you are using kind of mainstream apps, especially if you're a Mac, you know, hardcore Mac guy and using Mac apps, it is, you're going to love it. You're going to love
it.
One of the things I expected to really love it. I've been one of those people saying this is a revolution. I still think it is. And you know, Owen, when you get to the M2 or the rumored M1X with a 16-inch MacBook Pro and the M2 next year or three, and you're having many more cores and many more GPUs, you're gonna really see some amazing stuff. This is clearly a family that has a lot of headroom, a lot of room for growth, and is going to rapidly outpace what is now a 30-year-old architecture, the x86 architecture. So we can say that. But there are going to be some growing pains, and I'm actually a little bit less excited about it now that I have one because of two things. One, it's going to be a while. For some reason, it's going to be a while before a lot of the edge case tools even work. I was surprised at how few development tools I use don't even run. Lisp won't run. I just now got a development version of Emacs that works, and in fact, it's fully native. I use a tool called Racket, doesn't work. A lot of stuff just won't run, and I think it's not merely that it's ARM architecture, because most open source tools have an ARM version. Apple has taken this opportunity to super lock down the Macintosh, and I think this is actually going to be a bit of an issue going forward. It is not an open platform anymore. They asked Linus Torvalds, what do you think of the new M1, the creator of Linux? He said, I'd love to run Linux on it. I'm guessing we will never get it running on it because of Apple's T2 chip, its security, the way they're locking this thing down. It is kind of hostile to, I think, to outside developers.
Their bridge, you could see it coming from the fact the way the phones work with the App Store, that they want everything to work in an App Store environment. And this is the final countdown for that to start happening to where they can say, okay, you want to come back in and play? These are the new rules.
It's a walled garden.
Yeah. And I mean, before, you didn't have that issue because it was Intel, but now they really can say yes, no, yes, no. And they're probably going to slow roll that too because they want to wait until they get more better processors and things like that out into the market. So again, we've been having issues over the last 2 years with people wanting to sue Apple and have the ratios change, the percentages change. I can only see this getting worse for them as some kind of quasi monopoly in this market for what they're allowing on their systems.
Yeah, and I feel like I read it's going to future Hands on Mac episode, but I read, speaking of Neil Stephenson, he wrote a wonderful book about 20 years ago, called In the Beginning There Was the Command Line. And he talks about Windows and Macintosh and Linux. He actually mentions BOS, so that dates it. But one of the things he says is, he said, imagine a crossroads with four car dealerships. there's the car dealership that's making bicycles, basically. And then across the street, along comes this dealership. That's Windows. Along comes this dealership. Actually, that's DOS. The dealership across the street that's making these very sleek automobiles. They're kind of futuristic. The DOS guys look across the street, say, uh-oh, and they make a moped. They put an engine on the bicycle, and they say, see? And it's slowly gotten better. Now it's kind of a family station wagon, but it breaks down a lot. It needs a lot of gas. It's burning oil. Meanwhile, across the street, you've got these snooty people using these very slick, high-performance kind of closed universe things. And then there's a bunch of hippies in yurts and tents who are building Linux, and they're making these amazing RVs, and they're putting them on the side of the road saying, they're free. Come get them. They're free. They work really well. They're open. They're free. But people go, no, you hippie. I'm going to go buy a station wagon or one of these. And he says later, he said, actually the Mac isn't so bad. I'm starting to like it. But I think actually that future that he described is becoming more and more real, that we're now seeing three distinct paths. And I've talked a little bit about this before, but now having used the M1 for a week, I have a much clearer vision of Microsoft really doesn't care what you use. They're going to virtualize Windows Virtual Desktop with the very bad acronym WVD. Is coming next year. And that's what I think a lot of businesses will end up using, with some sort of cheap, thin client. Kind of like Stadia, but not for games, for business software. Apple's making what is essentially an appliance play. Just like the phone, just like the iPad, their computers are going to be appliances. They'll work great. They'll be secure. And as long as you don't want to deviate, you know, that command line, that whole Unix thing, And then there's going to be these funky-ass Linux machines that will maybe run on, you know, some people are speculating maybe Qualcomm will look across the street and say, oh, we could do that and make something like the M1, because they've always focused on low power over performance. But essentially, Linux is going to be the last bastion of the hippie, the open source, the freedom developer, because Apple's going to just lock it down more and more. And that concerns me. Frankly,
well, I'm still living in this Threadripper 3900, 128 gigs of RAM.
But you're still using Windows.
Oh yeah. Oh no, no. I mean, again, I 2 years ago I switched back to Windows because she just was looking better, and I'm not going to switch back to Apple till Apple like M2.78 blows my brain out. Because again, right now, proxies or whatever, I can render 5 or 10 lines of 4K and 8K, and I can sit here and work on my machine. I can't do it with these M1s yet. I don't care what nobody says. So the future, cool. But for right now, I love the fact that I got all this RAM in here. This thing cost me like under $2,500, the price point of what it is for what I need to do. And guess what? I got all the apps I want.
And as long as you live in the app that you need, you probably don't care that Windows is a piece of junk, because it, you know, gets the job done, and you're not living in Windows.
It's not. Don't stop it. Don't you disrespect.
It's a piece of junk.
It is not a piece of junk, okay?
First of all, that Mike, do you want to break us up here? You used to edit Windows Magazine, didn't you?
I did, and it was a piece of junk.
It still is a piece of junk. It's getting worse. Go ahead, Owen. Defend your piece of junk.
Hey, I got Corsair Sexy Lights. I got 128 gig Dominator RAM.
Yeah.
I got Threadripper processor.
Yeah.
I got more hard drive space than the Lord allows, okay? And this thing is a beast. I got over 1 million photos on my computer. You know how much it would cost me to do that on Apple? $19,000, because they charge a tenth. Shut up.
You basically have the spinner hubcap of computers. Admit it.
You are so disrespectful.
Admit it.
You're about to go cyberpunk your way to a video game and talking about what I got over here. Okay, I can run 9 Minecraft servers on this thing. Okay? I can take over the world. All right, go ahead with your little M1.1. Call me with this M3. Then we'll be talking. Then you can call my computer piece of junk. For now, samesies.
Yeah, you're not going to the dark side yet. I don't think, Leo, you said that you found it disconcerting that the hippies are getting even more open and
that's good.
Mac is coming.
That's good.
Well, that's good. But the world's divided even further than it used to
be.
But I don't think that's disconcerting at all. I think that, you know, for the vast majority of people, of course, it's going to be computing in general. The experience is going to be an appliance experience. They don't care about
they'll
RAM.
Be happy.
They don't care about the M1. They don't care about the details. Just they want to do everything that they want to do, and they don't want to think about it even further. Then there are two kinds of power users. There's the super technical, I want to build everything, do everything from scratch, understand everything, control and customize everything. Those people will be on Linux. And then there are the power hungry maniacs like Owen, who just want, they're just drunk with power, and they need, like, you know, terabytes of storage and massive quantities of anything they want and don't want to be stopped. And I actually think it's kind of a beautiful thing that we have at least three options generally for different personality types, different work styles, different types of people. And I just think it's a beautiful thing. I will say, though, as a Pixelbook user and a Chromebook user, which I'm going to move to Apple, as next move is going to be to an Apple laptop. I think it's gotten to the point where the Pixelbook and the Chromebook, the high-end Chromebooks, this is one of the best places to run Linux these days.
I agree. Actually, and Owen might make the case that Windows is a pretty good place to run Linux these days with WSL.
It is. I mean, if you want to overkill, but I mean, I just need options, okay? Eric, you think Apple's cool until Apple locks everything down and you're paying like
And I'm concerned about that. I agree. That's
click.
A problem.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, you want to click here? It's going to be 2 cents. Yeah. It's 2 cents per click every time you click. Like, and then what are you going to do? Like, I don't know. It just seems like really fishy the way they're doing stuff. And I'm just waiting for the day that my daughter graduates so I can get out of this ecosystem.
Oh, is that the only reason you have an iPhone is because of your daughter?
Oh, yeah. If I didn't need to track my child 24/7, 365. No doubt. Like, if Samsung or anybody else offered the same ubiquitous, like, I can just know where my child is at all times.
You can't do that on an Android device?
You got to pay. It's glitchy. It don't work. Like, that is one thing about the garden. It just works.
It does work. Yeah.
I'm texting her, and she says, I didn't see the text. I'm like, it came on your iPad. It came on your MacBook Pro. It came on your phone. I mean, the watch blinked. How did you not see my text? What do you mean you didn't see it? So that's the lifestyle I'm living. And as soon as she graduates, I'll get out of it. But for right now.
Your daughter can't wait to move to Android.
Yeah. Right? She's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good reason.
I'm out.
That's a good reason. By the way, thank you. Your daughter sent us some lovely soap. I really appreciate it. It smells great.
Don't take it personally, Leo. He's not hinting.
Well, okay, I'm just going to say some of the flavors are a little odd.
She's 13. So you got she likes coffee, so there's a coffee soap. That gets you woke up in the morning, you know what I mean?
Does it have caffeine?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know what it does for you. I'm just saying, yeah, it's got a little coffee.
She should put a little caffeine in it. It would, of course, have no effect, but people would get excited to buy it.
Yeah, you want to overpromise and underdeliver. You see what I'm saying? You just say it's a coffee scent, and she's got one that's like Captain Crunch. I mean, you might feel like you're in a bowl of cereal while you're taking a shower, but it is a delicious shower, nonetheless.
Exfoliating. That Captain Crunch, like, is very exfoliating.
It's good. It smells good. Does it have Captain Crunch in it?
It might. There's a little gold flex on. I don't know if you saw it or not.
I did see it. I'm trying to figure it out. Yeah.
I mean, if you
where can we get these soaps?
Like 40 bars to get some money, but you might get a little something out of there, you know?
I want to give her a plug at the top of the show. We normally save it for the bottom of the show. Where can we get her fabulous soaps?
HygieneQueen.com or Leah.com. LEIYAH.com. She's out here. Oh, and I'm selling beard oil too now. If you want a beard that looks luxurious like mine, she's allowing me to sell beard oil. And I'm probably going to make us a beer bomb and beer coming soon.
By the way, this is her personal site. This is so cute.
She'll also do babysitting.
Oh, yeah. Well, when COVID gets done, she gets back
pinch
to babysitting. She's certified. You know, she's certified in case you want to take her on one of the trips, Uncle Leo, and watch one of the kids. I know she's younger than your kids, but she's responsible.
Oh, I just love her. She is such inspiration. And I just want to say, if you want to get some delicious soap or even some beard oil, you're getting in the business too, huh? That's good. There's the Crunchberry soap. Queen of Sheba, a.k.a. Lavender Smoke. She's really doing some interesting stuff. What flavor is the
that
panda?
That does have caffeine.
It does. It looks like it does.
Sprinkle a little crackle on top.
Squeeze a panda to get that.
You don't really know what she's doing, do you, Owen? She's over there in the room. She's making this stuff. You'd have no idea.
She makes her decisions. You know what I mean? At first, she took her own pictures for her products. I was like, I can do it. Like, I got like a good, I can, she's like, let me do it. So after the new year, we're going to be doing some more promotional stuff. She's going to let me help her, but she's been wanting to do it on her own, and that's fine.
Hell yeah. H-I-G-I-E-N-E queen, or everything's spelled weird. So maybe it's easier to go LEIYAH.com.
That's right.
Good Leah. For her. Sell a lot of soap, Leah. You rock. It's the best.
You know what? When you have a kid that's like a nerd and she's into tech stuff and she's like in quarantine, she's like, Dad, I got to wash my hands all the time. My hands are getting raw. Can I make soap? And I'm like, sure. I spent $50 on soap. She's like, you think I can sell soap? I invested $400. She sold it to her friends. She bought more soap. And now I made her website because she was into it. And it's good that, you know, during this time, you know, she's the only child that it gave her something to do. You know, she takes it really seriously. She likes it. Awesome. So it's great. It's good.
I particularly enjoy the King James II Manly Soap. It's a mix of lemon, bergamot, cool mint, lavender, green accord, sandalwood, cedarwood, amber, and musk. She says it smells just like walking into a barber shop. And it has organic Irish sea moss and activated bamboo charcoal in it.
It's healthy.
It is actually a fabulous soap.
I don't want to take over the show with that stuff because I thought the soap was all the same, right? Because I'm a guy, I don't care. I get out and I was ashy after I get out. I'm like, okay, I put this soap on and my skin's actually moisturized. Oh, there's actually a difference in soap when you buy. Because I thought women just spent $8 on a bar of soap for fun.
Because they were nuts. Yeah. Anyway, Leah, thank you for the soap. And I appreciate it. And it really is good soap. So there you go. That's your first free commercial, Leah. From now on, we
got to pay.
Got to pay.
Checks in the mail.
We're talking about Apple. I don't know what to make of this story at all. Apple's head of global security, you'd think a guy would be pretty buttoned down. It has been indicted by the Santa Clara County Sheriff's Department. The California court has indicted Thomas Moyer. He's accused of offering iPads to the Santa Clara County Sheriff's Office in exchange for concealed carry permits for four Apple employees. In a famous iPad for concealed carry trade.
I love this story because it lends itself to such delicious tabloid headlines.
No kidding.
You know, Apple busted in guns for iPad scheme, you know, stuff like that. It's just so fun. But basically, the details are less salacious than that. I mean, it appears to be criminality. But apparently, there are a couple of people in the sheriff's office. Of course, in California, sheriffs get to decide who gets gun permits of various types. And they have wide discretion. There are some counties you cannot get a gun at all. These guys were apparently using their ability to withhold permits to get little benefits for the department. And they, when Apple came to get four gun permits, they basically said, well, if you want those permits, we'd really love some iPads. And so Apple, you know, so they said, we'd love essentially $70,000 worth of iPads for you to get four concealed carry permits for security guards at Apple. And it appears to be that Apple may have said okay. And before the deal went down, the sheriff's office found out that there were, you know, search warrants to pursue this criminal charge. But it's really, I don't think this isn't a matter of Apple's head of security going to the sheriff and say, hey, how about some iPads for some? No, it was the impetus was the sheriff's office, which was demanding this in exchange for something that Apple felt like they really needed. In a security for big tech companies, I think, what is it? Zuckerberg, Facebook spends millions of dollars a year just on Mark Zuckerberg's personal security.
A few iPads, big deal, right?
Yeah.
Well, Apple says, after learning of the allegations, we conducted a thorough internal investigation and found no wrongdoing. We should point out that Laurie Smith, who is the sheriff, has been accused in the past of deliberately withholding permits to carry concealed weapons until applicants did favors for her. The local NBC affiliate did an investigation in June that found donors to Smith's reelection campaign were 14 times more likely to get concealed carry permits than those who didn't donate. So this sounds like a long time little shakedown.
Yeah. I mean, they police themselves, Mike, so I'm not worried about it. I mean, and not for nothing, if anybody can really look into something, it's Apple. Like, when Apple wants to look into something, they don't check text messages. They got to record a phone call.
They got everything. Yeah.
They got GPS data location. How long did you spend in their office? You couldn't have put that deal together in 3.5 minutes. So we know that you didn't do it. But that kind of thing, I'm from the East Coast. So New York, you hear about this kind of stuff all the time,
right,
around carry concealed permits. So there's always handshaking and other terms I won't reference to sound horrible, but there's something to it.
It was a plot point in Billions, in the TV show Billions, exactly, in New York. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I feel like Apple was like, that what you're asking is too high. And then they're like, oh, you don't want to pay that price? Well, now we're going to rock you up for scamming us. Yeah. I feel like that's more so what happened than anything else, because this kind of thing happens all the time.
Yeah.
Yep.
They met at a Jamba Juice. That's something that doesn't happen too much in New York.
No, that's only in Saga Valley when that happened.
You want to discuss guns? Meet me at the Jamba Juice.
Yes.
So Moyer's indicted. Is the sheriff also indicted? Yeah, two officials.
No, not yet.
Two officials in the office were indicted, not Laurie Smith herself.
They're still looking into her. So
there are two officials accused of soliciting a bribe. So, we'll see what happens here. But now that we know the whole story, it is a great tabloid headline. But now that we know the story, maybe it's a little bit less.
Yep.
Let's take a little break. There is a lot more to talk about. Owen J.J. Stone, Doctor, is with us. I wish you'd brought some of your mac and cheese. Go ahead.
Oh, my mac and cheese is delicious. When I come out, I will bring you some. I make the best mac and cheese in the world.
Oh, it looks so good.
Makes no doubt. Seven cheeses.
Why seven? Wouldn't one be enough?
You know, like anything, you know, you start off with an M1 chip, and then at some point you evolve, baby.
You
know,
you got the M7 cheeses.
We M7 cheeses. You know, I mean, Mac 7. We are in the future, I believe.
It's a seven cheese processor. Also with us, he's a pretty darn good cook himself, Mr. Mike Elgin from ELGAN, elgin.com.
Yes.
And since we gave Leah a big plug, we'll give your son a big plug for his little enterprise coming.
And my son has a real deal and special for your audience.
Oh, stay tuned. Oh, that's exciting. Our show today brought to you by Barracuda. You know the name Barracuda. I mean, they're probably the best known name in enterprise grade security solutions, protecting email, networks, data, applications. And now more than ever, you need Barracuda's total email protection. Did you know that 91% of all cyber attacks start, it's very simple, with an email? It can kill you. Spear phishing, ransomware, account takeover, conversation hijacking. You've got employees at home no longer protected by the umbrella of protection at your work. They're opening those emails. One wrong click can cost you money, customers, your reputation. And by the way, of course, the scammers are jumping on whatever's going on. Barracuda's researchers have observed, as an example, a spike, a 667% spike in coronavirus-related spear phishing attacks since this began at the beginning of the year. They impersonate groups like the World Health Organization. They use domain spoofing. They promise, you know, information or training related to the coronavirus. It's all about tricking your employees into clicking that email. That's why you need Barracuda Total Email Protection. It includes all-in-one email security, backup, and archiving for your Office 365 account. AI-based protection. It's important because the hackers aren't sitting still. They've got new scams every single day. So, you know, you've got to have protection that gets smarter and better every single time. It'll protect you from spear phishing, account takeover, and business email compromise. They have an automated incident response that gives you options so you can quickly and efficiently address the attacks. That's important. The faster you act, the more effectively you act, the more you can limit the damage. And they even have security awareness trainings for your employees so they can be in the first line of defense. Ensure the safety and security of your business. Right now, you can get a free email threat scan of your Office 365 account. Completely risk-free, no pressure. But and maybe it's a little scary to even think about this, but honestly, you need to know what's in that inbox. Go to barracuda.com/twit for that free threat scan for your business. Barracuda, BARRACUDA.com/twit. You know the name. Barracuda, your journey secured. Thank you, Barracuda, for supporting This Week in Tech. Thank you for supporting Twit by going to that address, barracuda.com/twit. Just to wet your whistle a little bit, and it's just a rumor, but Ming-Chi Kuo, who is the supply chain rumor guy, everybody's using this Craig Federighi picture of him staring into the laptop. It's so
favorite that picture.
Find, you know, find somebody who looks at you like this guy looks at a MacBook.
Yeah, baby. They must have known. I mean, he posed. They must have known. Apple knew that this would be, you know, you'd see this image everywhere. Anyway, according to Ming-Chi Kuo, Apple is already working on next generation laptops with new, all new design for the second half of 2021. We've also seen rumors that it'll be a 16-inch M1X with maybe 16 cores, maybe even more cores. So Apple is not going to sit still on this one. And I have to say that my experience and the experience of everybody's reviewing these things is it's very impressive with what Apple has done with a first generation chip. And what the thing to watch before you go buy one is, are the tools you use going to be native? If they are, you're going to have an amazing experience. That's what I think. Apple is talking to Foxconn and others, Pegatron, another supplier, about moving production out of China as China gets more uncertain as the trade war goes on. And in fact, a Biden presidency will not change that, according to Bloomberg. They're talking about moving to anywhere but China's India, Southeast Asia, the Americas, Foxconn. Apparently, because not only politics, but also China's getting more expensive. Maybe that's tariffs. But Vietnam and India are improving competitiveness. Well, I wish they would look at opening plants in the U.S. I really do. I don't know why they don't.
Well, a couple of things. So first of all, this is part of a longer trend that's been accelerated by the coronavirus. People are realizing that consolidating everything in one country is super risky, and that you want not just to get out of China, but to be in multiple locations.
Diversify.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a little more expensive. But one of the reasons China is getting more expensive is simply because there is a saturation among their workforce. It's actually difficult now to hire qualified people in China. And so the wages are going up in China. China is emerging as an economic power, and wages go up. So this is just part of the normal. This is one of the beautiful things about capitalism. It takes a very poor country, raises them up,
and then
feeds a lot more people, and then they move out because they have all, and then they become, you know, the consultants or whatever. You talk about the Americas specifically. The two most likely places in the Americas are Brazil and Mexico. Great places for manufacturing. The United States is a horrible place for manufacturing. Americans make way too much money and are way too entitled to do this kind of factory work. I mean, you have to have a super motivated and yet super educated and yet relatively low paid workforce in order to do the kind of factory work that China set the mold for. And Americans just don't want to do that stuff.
They just want to get paid for it. What you just said, that kind of stuff makes me really mad, because they want to pay these people nothing and have to put nets up on their buildings so people don't jump out of their windows making Nikes and phones and all this kind of stuff, paying them nothingness. So let's move to another country where people have nothing, work them to the bone and give them nothing. So we would do the work here, People used to build cars here and build everything here, but
right.
we also care about our environment. We care about the waste that goes into our water system and how our kids are going to survive, but we're sure happy to go send it off to China, fog up their things, have them wear masks 10 years before everybody else, and now move it on down to another country. So, I mean, there's just grand scope on this whole Americans don't want to do the job thing. We want to do the job. We want it done properly. We want it done right for the ecosystem, and we want to get paid for that money because, you know, we got to have the profits. This shoe only cost you $13, Nike, bought, sold, and shipped, but we only paid the person 30 cents a day. Now we're going to sell this shoe for $250, hopefully hit the opposite market and goes for $1,000. So again, I'll shut up again, but that's put that.
Well,
in
we don't want, I will hold the line on environmental impact, but I think Americans understand that a product made in America might cost a little bit more. You think Americans are unwilling to pay it? Is it our fault?
Yeah, it's Owen's fault.
It's Owen's fault.
It's Owen's fault.
The profit.
Here's why.
The profit. No, again,
you won't even buy a Mac that is already made with sweatshop labor at minimum cost. You won't even pay that price. So wait till you buy that MacBook Pro that's made in California. It's going to cost you $5,000.
If I was paid a better living wage, it'd be easier for me to afford the hike that's going to come up on this also. The fact that wages haven't gone up in the last 20 years and people are fighting and complaining about that, keeping most average Americans in poverty, making under $34,000 a year is the problem. Buying this phone is not the issue. I could buy this phone all day. My daughter's got an iPhone 11 Pro, 256 gig. I dropped $1,300 on my kid. So a lot of people can afford a phone, a one-time purchase. But if you're making more money, you can afford the cost and what uptake for that, if you didn't have to have the greed and the money you're making. Bezos out here in the pandemic making $1 billion, won't give people 2 weeks sick leave when they get corona, so it runs rampant through their system. You know, you're going to give somebody a $300 bonus. You could give somebody $1,000 or $10,000. It wouldn't hurt your bottom line one bit. Your wife took half and you still out here balling. But it's not about that. It's not about taking care of the people. It's about greed and profits and stocks. So again, America would do the job if we were properly paid for the job and the job was done the right way. Mm-hmm. But we have politicians. We have people paying money to hide their money overseas. They don't even want to pay taxes. There's a whole other issue besides Americans not wanting to do a job that they should do if they got paid properly for it.
There's an advantage in China. Part of it is, you know, the Chinese workers get $100 a week. So that's certainly a part of it. There's also an advantage because you've got areas where everything is made. It's quick to ship. You could do just-in-time production. They've created regions. In other words, there's a logistic advantage to manufacturing in China. That's why I find it interesting that Wistron, Pegatron, Foxconn, they're all thinking about moving out of China because a lot of the suppliers are still going to be in China. I guess they're also in Taiwan and they're also in Korea. That's part of it. There was a study, I think a year ago or 2 years ago, that said a made in America iPhone would cost $2,000. So
$1,500 more? I mean, $500?
Yeah, $500 more.
$900, yeah. Exactly.
Or $900. This is from a while ago. So yeah. Tim Beharin did the estimate.
But to my point, if I was making better money, a $500 hike or a $1,000 hike wouldn't matter to me because my wages would go up.
Right.
So again, it's always the thing of I'm a small business owner, so I know the complaint of not wanting to pay people and the point you could pay people. So I do know there's a threshold for that, but it's really the biggest scam in the world to act like you can't afford to pay people. And, the prices of everything's going to go up. Yeah, but your wages went up, bro.
Well, like, but Owen,
$0.05 a loaf.
I don't think the question is if you can afford to pay people a certain amount. There has to be a motivation to do it. So if you're a company competing with other companies and you have the choice to have something manufactured in China, like everything is manufactured in China, or manufactured in the United States, you're either going to price yourself out of the market or you're not. And if you price yourself out of the market, you go out of business, and therefore companies that are willing to pay for U.S. wages don't exist because they go out of business because their prices are too high. So we have to
– If they're competing with other companies making in cheaper places, I guess you're right. You know, if Nike can sell a pair of shoes for $100 – you're not going to buy the $300 one that are made locally, right?
I mean, right. Unless you're buying them from Kanye West, who has the sneakers manufactured for $5 and sells them for $900.
Price is elastic. We know it because people will pay a premium for the wrong reason, not because it's made in America, but because a celebrity has endorsed it.
And that's what I mean
would love to see scam. People embrace the concept of the boycott. boycott for real. So if people, you know, if the consumer public stopped buying things based on this thing is the cheapest thing you can buy, then everything would change. But that's not the case. Like, look at airlines, for example. Airline flying used to be awesome, and now it's horrible. Why? Because people just go and buy the cheapest ticket. They don't buy based on what has the best food or the best service or the nicest people or whatever. And so to cut back to meet the actual demand of actual consumers, they have to make everything cheap and horrible. And that's exactly what happens in manufacturing. People buy based on the lowest price, and therefore things are manufactured in sweatshop conditions. And in China, increasingly by literally slave labor, where they're using these Uyghurs, they round up by the millions based on the fact that they're Muslims, and they put them into forced labor situations. They're major American corporations that are actually having things manufactured by slaves, basically. And nobody gives a crap, you know. And I think we should all, as consumers, like, do a reset and say, let's buy the stuff that is where the people working in the factory are making a living wage, where there's no exploitation, and so on, and that will create a market for humane manufacturing, whether it's in the U.S. or otherwise.
You know, it's ironic because there is a bill in Congress aimed at preventing forced labor in China. It's the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act, which would require U.S. companies to guarantee they do not use imprisoned or coerced workers from the Uyghur majority, the Muslim minority in Xinjiang. And apparently, according to the Washington Post, Apple is actually lobbying against this. It's
of course they are.
Yeah. Apple, of course, which makes a lot of hay about saying, no, we do everything we can to make sure that the workers are treated humanely and they're paid fairly.
And they have only the best suicide nets.
Yeah, only the best. So now, you know, this is an unsourced, it's the staffers, congressional staffers familiar with the matter, talking on the condition of immunity, of anonymity, said that Apple was one of many U.S. companies that opposed the bill as it's written.
I just want to list two more scams real quick. Mike, you're right. The quicker way to just have peace on earth would just be to take money out of politicians' pockets and not being able to fund the lobbyists and do that stuff. If we did that, we'd have a lot more fair system. And the other scam I want to talk about with Apple is they run that stupid commercial and tell me, oh, the box is thinner and we're going to help the environment by not putting a power brick in the box because there's already a million power bricks inside the ecosystem.
You're taking 55,000 cars off the road.
And yes, and inside this box with this phone is a cable that goes to a USB-C. Mind you, that every phone previous to this had a USB power brick to it.
So type
you
a. Still yeah.
go.
You still got to buy a new one.
Power brick. And they just lied to you to make it because we care about the environment. Right. We're going to save 400,000 trees by not giving you something we're still going to charge you $35 for, America.
If they really wanted to save the environment, they make it repairable, but that's... We all agree with that, I think.
Yeah. Wow. Apple lobbying firm. Get ready for this. This is Apple's Washington, D.C. lobbying firm. It's called Fierce Government Relations.
Fierce.
Maybe that's the name of the lobbyist. I don't know. They have to in a disclosure form that they are lobbying the bill on behalf of Apple. It's my guess they're not lobbying to make the protections for Uyghurs stronger.
I doubt it.
Yeah. Wow. You know, now I'm depressed, but there's some good news. Remember that Foxconn plant in Wisconsin? They got huge tax breaks for, and they broke the ground for, and
it's got to be employing millions of people by now.
But they did get a contract.
Mike's like, what?
What? They're going to make.
I thought it was an empty lot.
They're going to make circuit boards for Google servers. So there you go. I don't know how many jobs that's going to create.
It's going to create four high paying jobs. I assume it's like one of those show investment stock companies where they just have phones lines attached on like kitchen fold up tables and like.
This is a tough one though because I think we. we would love to see jobs come back to America. This is something that the president promised and campaigned on, and for 4 years, I think, has been trying to do. But we also live in a global economy, and we don't incent companies to do it. We give them lots of reasons not to do it. I would love to see these jobs come back to America. Unfortunately, here's the jobs we're getting instead. Amazon has gone on a hiring spree in the last 10 months. 427,000 new employees, mostly working, of course, in warehouses. Some of them outside of the U.S. in India and Italy. It is out now, has 1.2 million people working globally. But I have to think these are not the best jobs ever.
Again, you get sick, you're screwed. The job that now, especially in America, we're a service economy. So many small businesses have lost, and a lot of people have turned to an Amazon or to a Walmart to try and supplement their living. And with Amazon, if you get COVID, you're just out. Yeah, I mean, and a lot of people are still going to work sick and working through it because, you know, most cases people are fine. There's no issues, but you can't afford to stay home. So you still go in there and work that job, getting other people sick and that other person, the whole system. It's just a, you know.
But wait a minute.
You can't afford to go to the bathroom if you're an Amazon.
Wait a minute. Jeff Bezos said they're offering industry leading pay and great health care.
Industry leading.
He's a liar.
Okay. He is the richest man in the world.
I mean, he also, like, the thing that drives me the most crazy is, like, when somebody puts out the statistic in the pandemic, he's made enough money to pay every single factory employer $100,000 if he wanted to just give them a check. And that doesn't happen because of everything that goes on with business. But he could give these people a little bit of stimulus in his own company that would change their lives and their lifestyles. Instead of giving $100 million imaginary to the environment, you know, when he says, oh, I'm giving $10 billion to help save the rainforest with no plan, with no outline, with no nothing. You just put this out, you get press, and people say, oh, so you care about the environment. How about you put that money back into the people and just help them? I mean, something that Zappos learned a long time ago, take care of your employees, take care of your customers, and then happiness grows. So
I can't really blame Amazon, though, because this is how it works, right?
I know.
810,000 workers in the United States, about 85% of them are frontline employees in warehouses and operations. They earn the minimum wage in all Amazon plants, regardless of what the state minimum is, of $15 an hour. That's more than a retail job, but it's lower than typical warehousing jobs. Amazon said this week it would pay bonuses of $300 for full-time employees and $150. It sounds so small. And I have to say,
so small.
My daughter, who works full-time for Trader Joe's and makes what she considers a living wage, it's the minimum wage. It's not a living wage. It's very hard to live on the minimum wage, at least in Marin County of California.
The thing about Amazon is that it's both a monopoly and a monopsony, and they and there's a similar predatory scorched earth reality for employment. So, for example, the people who work at Amazon, you can say, well, just, you know, if it's so horrible, just go get another job. Well, Amazon itself has sort of destroyed many of the types of companies that they would otherwise work at. And again, it all boils down to the individual choices of consumers. All of us, myself included, I'm 100% guilty in this regard. Just go to Amazon. They got my address. They get, you know, overnight delivery. They have my credit card. It's like I can really. And so we just all just reflexively go to Amazon, and our own convenience and our own desire to pay the lowest price overwhelms our sort of collective humanitarianism. We really should be buying through all kinds of other retailers. And if we did that, not only would those companies do better, but those employees who work at Amazon would have other places to work. Again, that's not going to happen. People are more self-interested than they are interested in contributing to the greater good.
But people want these jobs. Amazon had a career day in September 16th. It said in the week leading up to Career Day, it got 384,000 job applications in the U.S. and Canada, 38 a minute. I think it might have something to do with how many people are out of work right now. Amazon is one of the few people hiring.
And it's not just Amazon. I know I sound like I'm just bashing Amazon. It's just corporate elite America that does the things they do. They also do a lot of good things. Like if you actually took the time to learn how to code, they're offering really great wages for those jobs. If you want to take the time to either get educated or educate yourself and get one of those jobs, that's one of the things that they're hiring for also. They're looking for coders on all levels, and that starts at like $54,000 to $100,000. So it's just one of those things where it's like, I know you could do better, and I just see the things that they do on a micro scale of the way they can crush businesses because now they are so big. Just a little inside science. They, with their returns now, they basically consolidate everything off, and they've branched out to multiple different stores to where instead of just returning it through Amazon, you take it to a store and then they consolidate and ship it all back. Well, they go to the store and they say, hey, we've got this new thing. We're going to bring people into your store. We're going to charge, we're going to give you a dollar per item, right? Store's like, oh, okay, cool. I've never dealt with Amazon, whatever. The first 3 months, they're like, boom, we're making all this money. This is great. We're also doing a lot of extra work. After 6 months, Amazon's like, you know what? We're going to go put them in 4 other stores. If you don't lower your price by 75%, we're just going to cut you out. Now you're like, you know, bought all these supplies, you've got all this different chain, and you've trained all these people into this stuff. I guess I have to accept the 30 cents on the dollar now, because what am I going to do? Say no and then not get anything? So they're so strong that they affect other businesses like UPS shipping, like FedEx shipping, the post office. They are just inundating America. I don't know about the world, but America, they've got their hands on everything right now. And it's a technical marvel. It's impressive, but it's also really greedy. That's what gets me all hyped up and angry about it, because we could be doing better.
I wish we could find a solution to this. I don't know what the
again, even human beings on natural level. I'll tell you one thing about regular people, because I'm talking about rich people. Regular people found out that at Halloween, you don't have to go into a store to return your costumes. So for the last 2 years, every year after Halloween, the next day and for the next week, at two of my stores alone, we returned 2,000-3,000 costumes.
What?
Family come in and return every single costume. Because you don't have to walk back into Walmart into the Halloween store and be embarrassed and say, oh, well, it didn't fit. Like, you wore it out on Halloween. You know you wore it to a party. And then you walk out embarrassed. But computer doesn't know. So you buy it on the 15th and you make sure you got that extra 15-day window. And everyone and their mom is returning Halloween costumes, to which they're just going into, what, a waste pile? Or something.
It's, you know, just, they're not selling them again. Yeah.
No. Exactly. So when people find a way to rip off the system, whether they're rich or on the bottom, human nature will give you that little edge if you want to take it.
I used to know a young lady would buy shoes at Nordstrom's, put tape on the bottom of them, wear them to a party, then return them the next day, take the tape off, return them the next day. They didn't look worn at all. Never had to buy a pair of shoes. It is sad, isn't it? On the other hand, maybe they can't afford it. This is the only way they can. I don't know what the answer is.
I say cut a sheet and put it on and just make your own home house. Yeah. Have fun with your family. Yeah. That's just me. And again, I'm not above scam.
I've had a tinfoil costume. It always works. It's a good way to go.
But did you return the tinfoil?
I did.
Take it back to Costco.
Took it back.
It didn't fit.
Didn't fit.
That Costco Christmas tree thing, you get 90 days if people return Christmas trees every
year.
Oh, you didn't see that?
You see all this because they come to you in your stores and you see all this.
I'm down here in the streets, Uncle Leo. That's what I said. The tech bubble for me is a totally different place. Like, when I see, I keep an eye on what kind of phones people are using, the watches, the devices. I got a good tally on what's going on in these streets, Uncle Leo. But yeah, the Christmas tree at Costco, that's a big deal. That's a thing.
Wow.
So, Leo, here's hope, I think, because I actually think there's a good chance that we are going to partially get out of this whole situation. And here's why. The United States of America we are a nation. We like to think of ourselves as rugged individualists, but we're actually conformists in a good way. When there's a fad, everybody jumps on board. And we actually make progress that way. There was a time when your dog could crap anywhere and nobody cared. And then there was a big fad where it's like, no, you have to have carry a baggie and then carry a steaming pile around with you.
Society kind of decided that's not okay.
Right. The same thing with littering, the same thing with junk food, the same thing with smoking.
How does that get started?
Martini lunches.
How do you do that?
Something in the people get fed up with something that's conspicuously wrong. And there's a big, like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, scorn and ridicule involved and shaming and all that kind of stuff. But it makes the world a better place. And I think that after, I don't want to get political at all, but after the Trump administration, I think people are so fed up with liars and cheaters that I think we're going to about to embark on a cultural revolution where we're fed up with liars and cheaters in general. And
okay.
I think
we have to, Mike, I don't want to pop your bubble here. I'm reading Jonathan Alter's wonderful new biography of Jimmy Carter. And this is the last time this happened. You may remember
the best ex-president we ever had.
You may remember Richard M. Nixon impeached before he got kicked out, resigned. Gerald Ford took over. And in 1976, a couple of years later, Ford ran against Carter. And Carter's whole thing was, his slogan was, "I will never lie to you." He ran on integrity. He ran on telling the truth, perhaps to his detriment, because 4 years later, a guy, a Hollywood actor, who instead of telling the truth, just said, everything's going to be okay. It's a golden era in America. It's mourning in America. He won and ran again at another 4 years, and it arguably was senile by then. Didn't matter, because it wasn't that Americans had wanted integrity in the office. They didn't. They turned on Jimmy Carter. They said, we don't like you. You're too honest. Malaise. Oh, yuck. They wanted somebody who would lie to them pretty.
Yes.
And that was Ronald Reagan for eight years.
I'm a huge political historian nerd, but let me contextualize this a little bit, because the criminality and lying of Nixon and Reagan was wiffle ball compared to the Trump administration.
Well, I'm hoping you're right. You're right. There's never been anybody quite so willing.
Well, the difference between the two, you have to make this distinction. Nixon's and Trump's corruption was self-dealing. It was designed to help themselves, in the case of Nixon and Trump politically, and in the case of Trump financially. In the case of Reagan, love him or hate him, Reagan's cheating and lying was in the service, was a misguided attempt to help the United States. The Iran-Contra scandal was designed to cheat for national security. It wasn't designed to cheat for personal gain, absolutely not.
Yep.
Money or any of that stuff. So I'm gonna give Reagan a relative pass because he was not lining his own pockets. Whereas I think and in the last 4 years, it's not just the Trump administration or the people around Trump or the Senate or anything. In general, there's been a sickening, rampant lying and cheating in the culture in general. And I think a lot of people feel the way I do, fed up with it, absolutely fed up with it. How do we get away from the liars and the cheaters? And I think that we have to come to understand the fact that ethics and morality is something that you work on. It's like going to the gym. You have to work on it. You have to think about it. You can't just reflexively reward the liars and cheaters. Otherwise, they grow in the culture and they become, you know, out of control, which is exactly what's happened. So I think we're in a totally different era than the Nixon era or the Reagan era. But this is we're in a whole nother place right now, especially with the recession and the coronavirus and all the stuff we've all suffered. I think it's really changed us as a culture. And I think, you know, I think everybody ought to join those of us who are like super interested in re-embracing, you know, ethics.
I agree. I'd love to see that.
Civic responsibility.
I may be too cynical to believe it, but I'd love to see
it. We're going to get on another story, but I just want to hand this pipe to you, Mike. I love you, but this is for your pipe dream.
That's not pipe. That's a Festivus pole. I recognize that.
It's a pipe. There's some kind of tubular. You know what I mean? Don't question what it is. Just look at what we're doing. So let's talk about something more realistic. We got another tech story here somewhere with something that actually could happen.
Are you actually uncomfortable by this conversation?
I'm not uncomfortable by it at all. I just don't want to go on another rant, and I don't want people yelling at me and telling me that I came on the show and turned it into a non-tech show. So I just want to get back to the tech. Because, again, people lie. We had Bill Clinton. He lied to his wife, and we accepted why, because he played jazz, and he was cool. Obama lied about a lot of stuff, but he had a jump shot, and he could dance, he could moonwalk, and he could sing. So we
There's a certain amount of lying that seems to be required if you want to be president of the United States.
Their lives that cheat on them and lie to their face, and they take them back. So yeah. Expecting the whole construct of people, humanity. I just told you humans are trash pandas. We are not great people. We are human beings. Tech store. Which one?
But if we had an ad campaign like Smokey the Bear, only you can prevent forest fires.
Or
maybe,
the crying Indian for littering.
Or crying Indian. I think, honestly, if you want to really give credit for seatbelts and litter and smoking and forest fires, those you really have to give it to the ad agencies of the world who've become so adept at influencing human opinion that they...
Those are physical things. Picking up crap is physical. Putting on a seatbelt is physical. The emotional construct of people being anti-lie, well, everybody lies, so I can't be anti-lie.
How do you feel about shaving your nether regions? Oh, look! He's got it!
You think I'm not prepared, Uncle? You think this nostril cleans itself? The rest of my body is smooth as my head, Leo, because I'm out here manscaping in these streets. Don't worry about what I'm doing. Get
way too much information.
Well, actually, it's our sponsor, Manscaped. Manscaped. This is actually the if you're quarantined with a Sasquatch, and clearly Owen is not a Sasquatch, you might want to take a look at this. The Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. It looks like, Owen, you bought it all. They've redesigned. That's the electric trimmer there, the lawnmower 3.0. This thing is amazing with its proprietary skin-safe technology. It's waterproof, so you can use it in a lake, in a river, in a stream, or the shower if you want. I tell you, listen how quiet that is. That's 7,000 RPM. That is a ceramic blade. And by the way, when you get the perfect package, you'll also get new ceramic blades every 3 months. Because the last thing you want when you're working down under is nicking or pulling. You also get the crop preserver. You get the crop reviver. I won't tell you what they do. Just let me say you want to apply these liberally at the right time, and they smell manly and great. They also have, they call this, now this might be a little bit of hyperbole. They call this the magic mat. It's actually just a little newspaper. I thought it was just for humorous reading, you know. But in fact, there's some good stuff in here, including some good manscaping designs you might want to apply. There's a little crossword puzzle.
Is there a pattern that you like to apply?
The shamrock, the royal. There's a little bird you could do. Get social. It's all in good fun. But the idea is actually you spread this out when you're manscaping.
On the floor. Catch all
on
your
the
clipping.
Floor. I didn't know. Micah had to explain it to me.
This nose hair trimmer thing.
Oh, isn't it good?
This thing is actually legit.
Like, they call it the weed whacker.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, I bought this on my own accord.
No.
Discount. This thing is, if you're over 40, you know you got them stragglers coming out. Fix that. Stop with the, fix it.
I have a friend. It was horrific. He basically had, I don't know, he was growing a shag carpet under his nose. It was the most revolting thing. And I'm talking to him, and I can't look him in the eyes because I'm staring at his nose hairs. And then as you get older, you haven't experienced this yet, but you're going to start, the hair starts coming out of your ears, your eyebrows start getting a little wacky. You're going to love having the Weed Whacker. It's the best electric nose hair trimmer ever made. This is their manicure kit. Look, let me tell you. If you're looking for holiday gifts for the Sasquatch in your life, if you got a quarantine with them, you know you want them to clean it up. Look, this is for their talons. This is something, by the way, I wish my dad had told me. Having manicured fingernails, women will judge you on your fingernails. I'm just telling you guys, you will be judged. So make sure you take good care of them. And it's easy. It's simple. This is a fabulous. And it all can be part of your future life with the Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0. There's a crop cleanser, body wash. It is awesome stuff. They smell good. There's no commitment. You can cancel at any time. I think you're going to want to get the blade upgrades for sure for either the weed whacker or the lawnmower. I love how they name stuff. Right now, 20% off plus free shipping when you go to manscaped.com/twit. manscaped.com/twit. Make Santa proud this year. M-A-N-S-C-A-P-E-D, past tense, manscaped.com/twit, because that's how you're going to look, how good you're going to look.
Come a man of the future. There's no more baby powder. There's crop preserver.
Crop preserver, baby.
Crop preserver replaces baby powder. You will enjoy it.
It's an anti-chafing product.
Yes. And it works. Like I said, baby powder out. Crop preserver.
No more baby powder. It's not good for you.
Become a man of 2040. You are a cyberpunk. You are in 2077 if you get yourself a crop preserver. Yes, I'm just letting you know.
Yes, sir. 20% off, free shipping. Please do us a favor. Go to let them know you saw it here. Go to manscaped.com/twit. Did you have a story in mind, Owen J.J. Stono, Doctor, or did you just want me to change the subject?
Well, I can rant about one more thing. The one story that I put in here, we can just jump down to it real quick.
Sure.
That Comcast to impose home internet data.
God diggity dang it!
And in my state, too. Like, I put out a Facebook thing. I got a Facebook group started. I'm like, switch to Verizon immediately. Like,
does Verizon, Fios, not have a cap?
No, not only do they not have a cap, they give you the gigabyte up and down. Like, my speed is balling. Like, my up and down is outrageous.
Unfortunately, Comcast, it's not available in my area, and I do have Comcast.
Comcast gives you 250 down and, like, 50 up.
They are going to – they've had this home internet data cap of – actually, I think it was a terabyte, but they say 1.2 terabyte. They launched it here in California. They're now launching it nationwide. If you go over your cap, $10 per 50 gigabytes – up to $100. Imagine your internet costing $100 more every month. And I used to get in such arguments with Dvorak over this. He's not here to defend himself, but I'm just going to say, it's my opinion, there is no technical reason at all for data caps. It doesn't solve any problem. They'll say, oh, you know, your neighbor's using too much. That is not true. It is not a way to protect their network at all. It's a way to extract more money out of you.
It's extortion.
And it is particularly aimed at those of us who undermine Comcast's business model by streaming Netflix or Amazon Prime or iTunes or whatever instead of paying the cable bill. It's pure greed. That's all I guess.
Yep.
Yeah.
Everybody should be aware of it so you can do something about it. It's like a drug dealer just giving you drugs and then telling you, hey, the price just went up 7,000%. I can't afford these drugs now. What am I supposed to do? I don't have – oh, I'm stuck because I don't have another option. Like, it's just bad when companies do this, and there is no reason to do it other than greed.
And they have a monopoly or a best of duopoly in many areas. You don't have a choice.
In my town, half the town can get Verizon. The other half has no option. Like, and just in one town, one side of the street got Verizon and they shut it all down, I guess, because of the pandemic. So now only one side of town has two options. The other side of town has only one. So,
and by the
hopefully
way,
hopefully Starlink will help that situation.
Well, there'll at least be some
SpaceX
competition.
Starlink.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Do you think?
I hope so.
Are you genuine?
No. I genuinely am very bullish on Starlink. For several reasons, and one of them is to provide an alternative in various markets. So we'll see what the reality of that whole service is in terms of the pay, in terms of the bandwidth and all that kind of stuff. But, if they go forward as advertised, you'll have another option in literally every single market.
Competition is key. And the FCC has essentially created these duopolies. The cable company is a monopoly in your town. It's a regional monopoly. The phone company, the ILEC, is a regional monopoly. And those are the two internet service providers for almost 90% of Americans. Incidentally, you might say, well, how do you know, Leo, that they don't have to do these data caps? They say they have to because, you know, bandwidth is limited. And Dvorak and I used to get in this argument. I said, bits is water. It doesn't cost them more to give you more water. They'll make more bits. And the proof is in the pudding. For 60 days during the coronavirus pandemic back this past summer, they lifted caps. They were nice. They said, you're going to be Zooming. You're going to be doing that. That only lasted 2 months. Did the internet collapse? Did everybody die? Were we unable to get online? No. In fact, since they've turned those caps back on, I noticed Amazon's down a lot more. Microsoft's down a lot more. There was no side effect to eliminating caps for 2 months.
Cell phone industry. Remember when you only had a certain amount of space and then AT&T went unlimited and everybody moved on AT&T? They didn't die and fold. Other networks were like, I guess we got to do it too. T-Mobile came to do it. Verizon finally came around and said, okay, everybody's unlimited. Okay, we're just going to charge you whatever dollar amount it is. But now it still works. The internet hasn't fallen apart because now every cell phone service offers unlimited. And now with their fake 5G in most places, you know what I mean? The internet is still fine. It's just greed.
It was bad for a while at AT&T when the iPhone first came out because they didn't anticipate how much data people would use. But so they beefed up their infrastructure. Guys, it's not like they're not making a lot of money. It's not like it's not a profitable industry already. They can put more.
I think what happens is that these companies look at the bandwidth usage, the relative usage, and they see that, you know, a huge percentage of their customers are barely using any data at all. And then there are people like Owen who are just using terabytes of data just flying around and thinking there's got to be a way. You know, they're just using our service so much more than these other people. There's got to be a way to extract all kinds of money out of these people. And they just can't stand the fact that there's such a divergence of consumption for their product. And logically, they think, well, we got to just like make some mint out of these people. We got to improve our, you know, sort of how we look to our shareholders and show growth. Let's just screw these guys. Yeah. They're using it, overusing it. But the reality is that just when you offer a public service like that, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get super users. You're going to get people barely use anything.
They can handle it. They can handle it. I've talked to Dane Jasper, a good friend, CEO of SonicNet. They're rolling out fiber as widely as they can in our area and much of California. I asked him about this. They don't have data caps. So we don't need data caps. There's plenty. Plenty of bandwidth out there.
Mike, why are you dry snitching on me? Mike, don't be telling people about the terabytes. I gotta hide the target. My name is Owen Juan Stone. Don't. I'm not using terabytes.
How many of those special Fire TV sticks do you have in there, Owen?
Hey, Nobody believes you, Owen.
My PS5 is beaming directly into the Pentagon right now. Okay, don't worry about Mike, don't snitch on me, baby. I'm over here with the pedophiles. Don't let nobody know.
No, the truth really is Comcast is terrified. All of these companies are terrified because their big profit items are cable TV services. And we're getting more and more over the top. They know that at first they were in denial for a long time saying, no, we're not worried about cord cutters. Now they know the time is rapidly approaching when people will stop getting their TV services and just do it over the internet. Their whole plan right now is, well, we're going to make the internet as expensive as cable TV was so that we can maintain our profits.
Right. Yeah. And the pendulum is swinging. Like if they actually went and cut their prices, like YouTube TV just went up $25 on me, and I'm like, come on, bro. I barely watch TV. I bought you just for football. Now I got to cancel them and pause them every once in a while. Then you got HBO giving out HBO Max. Like, now there's too much streaming, and if the cable company said, hey, look, we're going to bundle this and give you this, then I'd probably go back to cable because cable just got so outrageous that if they – now when you add up 32 subscriptions, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm cheating. I'm not paying everything. You know what I mean? I got one person with Netflix, got another person with Disney. And I mean, I got – you know, I mean, we out here – we in a coalition. But I'm saying there's too many subscriptions going on right now. So if the cable companies cut down, they'd make all that money back. They could switch the pendulum around for themselves. Yeah. But they'd rather just charge more for internet.
The number of pay TV households buying cable peaked in 2010, 10 years ago, at 105 million. It's been dropping ever since. By next couple of years, it'll probably be down to 72 million. It's widely expected it'll end up half of that. There'll still be people using cable TV for a while, but it's slowly going away. And actually, I think the trend is actually accelerating because I look at anybody under 25, and their entire content comes from YouTube. They don't watch cable TV.
Yep.
So Nick at Night viewership down 24%, AMC down 22%, FX down 21%, USA Networks 19%, TBS down 16%, TNT down 14%. It's across the board. It's just, and so these companies are, you know, they're scrambling. Now, Starlink's interesting because I think Starlink might be expensive. They're launching satellites like crazy, just launched another 60 last week. They are currently charging $99 a month, but up front you have to pay $500 for the satellite dish.
Yeah, that for the beta test, and we don't know what the pricing will be for post beta test. So it could be more, it could be less. We don't know but we do know that that satellite dish is super expensive. They're taking a bath.
They're selling it below
even
cost.
With that pricing.
Yeah.
Yes. And so there's some uncertainty there that we don't know about. But I think that in the end, I think it will be a kind of expensive service. But with the trend of people moving out of cities and moving to rural areas, to me, you know, one of the biggest reasons why, you know, you don't want to build a house in the middle of nowhere is internet connectivity. It's just awful out in the sticks. And now with the improvements in solar power and now with the, you know, internet-based satellite like Starlink, you're going to be able to buy a piece of property in the middle of nowhere.
Well, wait a minute.
With no infrastructure.
You just did that.
Yes, I did.
Do you have internet in that new place?
What Leo's talking about is that Amir and I just bought 17 acres of forest land in southern Washington, which itself actually gets mobile broadband. So you can at least get, you know, your phone.
But there's no
to
cable going out your way or anything like that.
There might be. However, my brother has a piece of property just 6 miles west. And they have nothing out there. They have no and he just can't wait to get Starlink. They don't have their phones. Their cell phones don't work. They don't get cable. They don't get anything. And yet they are building a house there and they're living on this property and they do have electricity. They're going to build a septic system. They can have everything except for the internet connectivity, which, of course, is their whole livelihood.
It's kind of the dream, living off the grid, you know.
Totally. And
yeah.
And there's a sort of self-reinforcing phenomenon that's happening as we speak. So people are moving out of cities. Richer people are moving out of cities. People with jobs that they can do online are moving out of cities.
But you gotta have internet to do that. You gotta have good internet.
Yes, but what's happening with all this flight from cities is the cities are gonna become less desirable places to live. These are the people that support, you know, the yuppie, you know, the hipster coffee shops and like all the cool things that makes living in a city so great. And so city living is going to get worse, which is going to inspire more people to leave the cities, which is going to make the cities even worse, et cetera. So we're going to see, I think, our major cities turn into what they were in the 70s, which is, horrible places to live. And I think a lot more people are going to be living in the sticks. And I think that Starlink is an underappreciated factor in the flight from cities and the embrace of the wilderness, living in the middle of nowhere.
You're kind of betting, though, that Elon can pull it off.
I'm totally part on it. I'm totally part of it.
Yeah. So basically you and your brother are betting that Elon's going to pull it off.
Well, he is more than I am because he's going to live there. We're going to do a cabin where we live there sometimes when we're not traveling. But he is absolutely betting on that. I mean, you know, they are looking at other, you know, a million other options. There are no good. I mean, there's connectivity within like half a mile away. And there are ways to beam that with a partnership with somebody as a complicated, problematic situation. But they're really looking forward to satellite internet. And in our case, we'll figure out the best option for internet. We will get internet, but we're not really, really depending on it. Once this thing is a known commodity, once people really understand how Starlink works, I think you're going to see the real estate market in the middle of nowhere just completely take off because there are tons. You know, we spent 6 months looking for a really great piece of property, and there were three quarters of the places we looked at were like, oh, wow, they are so far in the middle of nowhere that that is just not going to happen. But once, you know, Starlink comes online, all of those properties become desirable to lots of people. They're cheap. They're beautiful. They're in nature. They have everything going for them except internet connectivity. And Starlink is going to change that.
Elon, by the way, now the second richest man in the world.
Yep.
After Jeff Bezos beating Bill Gates. Took Bill Gates a long time to become the richest man in the world. It feels like Elon, you know, I feel like Elon, he made money in PayPal. He basically took that money, put it all on Red. He put all his chips on Tesla, and it paid off. It entered the S&P 500, and suddenly he's the second richest man in the world. Obviously, I owned a Tesla. I think what he did is great. He jump-started electric vehicles in the world. I think SpaceX is great. He's kind of strange.
Yep. But he's really good at making big bets that actually pay off. I mean, you've got the Boring Company, which I think could turn into something. You have SpaceX, which suddenly is just it's the most amazing thing happening in space right now. They're sending astronauts. He is the America's space program in terms of sending astronauts into space. We were relying on Russia for
we were using Soyuz vehicles.
Yep.
Vehicles from the Soyuz era to put astronauts on the space station. This time, three Americans and a Japanese astronaut. The Japanese astronaut said it was the best. He's been on Soyuz. He's been on the old American flights, NASA flights. And now he's one of the few people who's been all three. He said he's a connoisseur, apparently, of space flight. He said, this is the best ride I ever had. Best ride.
Oh, by far. It's like a big room with like Lazy Boys. The Soyuz capsule is like you're in a Pringles can, like stuffed in there with like one of those inflatable rafts when somebody pulled the thing and everybody. I mean, it's just a great experience.
You think it's is that going to make the world a better place, though?
It's going to make Elon Musk's bank account a better place.
Yeah. He's also got this company, Neuralink. He's trying to create, you plug it in, the jack into the metaverse kind of.
Yeah, that's that, dumb. That,
the Neuralink thing I'm out on, we're not going to Mars. The Boring Company is trash. But Starlink and sending people into space and Tesla, those are all the jams. So it's like he's got three for, he's like 50% and 50%
and of the what batteries. He's doing and the batteries. Money.
Batteries. That may be the single, I mean, that is the kind of infrastructure investment that may actually be the real value of the whole thing, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I appreciate what he's done for my stock portfolio.
You got some of that Tesla stock?
Oh, I had that Tesla stock when Tesla stock was $65 a share. I'm an early Tesla. I made the mistake, also not mistake, of selling off half of it right that boom time, and I bought myself some Bitcoin, so I double dipped, and I'm just riding this Elon train. You know what I mean?
Riding that train.
Yeah, I mean, he's not
high
boring.
On champagne.
No holes. I don't believe in that. We're not going to Mars. I don't believe in that. And he ain't jacking nothing in the back of my head. But the Starlink, the batteries, the Tesla, solar, all that tangible stuff.
You bought it at 50. It is now $585.76.
Yeah, I sold it off when it was like, what was it, 1,000? Something. It was something
even more?
High. I made a good amount of
Can I invest with you, doctor?
Hey, look, I'm just saying, I'm from the future. And I got to introduce you to some herbal medicine stocks that you can get on really cheap right now. I'm up 200% the last 2 months.
You're kidding.
I'm not.
Wow. So why do you buy on raffle tickets for PS5s?
Because I'm a lucky guy. Spend a little money, play big. You know what I mean? It's one of those things, like Leo. It's like I'm living in a bunker. You don't know what I do for a living, but I do a lot of things for a living to live. But I just want to live regular. I'm about to go live out there to 2 acres with Mike. Mike got 2 acres in the side lot for me. As soon as we get that Starlink, I'm going to put my little mini house on there and become hanging out with Uncle Mike.
You are welcome. You are absolutely welcome.
I would live off the grid, but what I would also live off is the internet. I don't want to be on the internet.
Yes.
As soon as I'm
yes.
done podcasting, I don't know when that's going to be.
But never.
Never, probably. But as soon as I don't need to podcast, I guess, you know what I could do? I could do the show in the house and get somebody to drive it into town.
Yeah, on a hard drive. Yeah.
Just drive it into town and say, hey, I got a new podcast here. Could you just drive this into town? And John, you could be in town and we'll just give it to you and you could upload it. How about that? Yeah. See, I don't need internet.
If we had a Neuralink, I could just download your brain and we wouldn't need you anymore. That's the only reason you have to keep podcasting.
Well, that's the future. That is totally.
I'm not answering all these weird, random, I had a Digimazoo from 87. What do I do with it, guy? What are we going to do without you, Galea? So that's what we're working on, Neuralink.
No. That's cool. We have more than 100,000 hours of Leo in the can.
Yes.
It's more than enough.
This is what your retirement looks like, Leo. Yeah. So every show you've ever done will be entered into this AI.
Yeah.
And we're going to use generative adversarial networks, otherwise known as deepfakes, to simulate your voice.
Deepfake Leo.
And it's just going to – it's just these podcasts are just going to be automatically generated.
They'll never end. And it may have – I just want to say you won't be able to tell, and it may have already happened.
And technically, we could just be using the system that YouTube uses to check out videos and algorithms for context. We don't need you anymore. I'm sorry, Uncle. I apologize. You are now retired. I am officially saying.
Thank you.
Episode 800.
I am out of here. Hey, before we go any farther, let's give Kevin his advertisement. Mike's son is doing some amazing stuff. Tell us about that, Mike.
Thank you. Yes, thank you so much. So Kevin makes this. This is a chatterbox. What this is essentially an Amazon Echo type device that anybody over the age of 8 or 9 can make themselves. So there's a cardboard outer box and you can customize it and get another one. They're very inexpensive for the outside parts. And then you put the electronics in there. There's a proprietary hat in there for the audio. There's a button on the top. So it doesn't listen unless you push the button. So it's not listening. It's very private. And neither Chatterbox nor any of the services that Chatterbox relies on knows who is using the service. It's perfectly private. Do not feed your kids into the Amazon privacy violating machine. It's also illegal for schools to do that because there are laws protecting kids from privacy violations. So once they've built this, they can use a very easy to use tool builder to build skills. Chatterbox doesn't do anything until you teach it how to do each and every thing. And so for kids under lockdown who are using this right now, they absolutely love it and their parents love it because it's endless learning and playing by developing skills. And with each skill, Chatterbox gets smarter. And so you push the button, you just turn on the lights. It does more than an Amazon Echo does, theoretically. It leverages all kinds of services through APIs, teaches kids what APIs are. It uses, Wolfram Alpha. It uses all these different brilliant services for the weather, for this, for that. You can communicate. You can make calls. You can send texts. You can do all kinds of things. And it's just a brilliant, brilliant product for kids who are looking for STEM education, who are learning language skills because you have to craft exactly what you say and what it says back. So you're thinking about language and how to communicate clearly. It's just the most fantastic educational product in history. And here's the part that I mentioned earlier. Starting Cyber Monday, which for Chatterbox lasts the entire week, you can get 25% off.
Nice.
So that's going to be at hellochatterbox.com. Starting probably today or tomorrow, he's going to put up that information. But I highly recommend this, whether you're a child or not, whether you have a child or not. It's just a fun project. It's pure fun. And you end up, at the end of the day, you end up with something like an Amazon Echo without the Amazon part and all the privacy violation that goes with that. So I highly recommend it. And it's just a wonderful thing. And it's just, he initially was going to spend 2020 selling this to school districts. They're not showing up for work for the most of the year. So he's been selling it to parents whose kids are in lockdown and need projects that will keep their mental stimulation going. So it's just a fantastic product.
I wish my kids were younger because I would love to use this to teach them. This is really cool. It can text and call, which is also cool. That is really neat. And it runs on a Raspberry Pi, which is
That's right.
Really interesting.
It's very, it's very efficient. And, you know, it's the secret sauce is in the interface and the software and also the audio hat that just makes building something. You know, everyone will say prepare kids for the future, teach them how to code. That is false. That is wrong.
Yeah.
Kids are not going to be typing code in the future. They're going to be interacting with artificial intelligence voice agents as the main interface for computers. And so you got to, if you want to prepare kids for the future, prepare them to fully understand what voice-based AI is and how it works. And that's what Chatterbox does.
Nice. And they're shipping quickly, so you can get it in time for Christmas if you order now. So
absolutely. Yep. And in fact, he launched last Christmas and he dragooned me into the manufacturing
process. Oh, really? Oh, cute.
Because, yeah, in December, we were just putting together kits and sending them out. Aww. And he hit every single one and every kid got theirs in time for Christmas. That was his Kickstarter last year. And he's just made massive improvements since then. So
that's so cool.
Check it out.
That's so cool. Congratulations, Kevin. It's really, really a great project. HelloChatterbox.com. HelloChatterbox.com. And now for a paid ad. our show today brought to you.
I'm going to send you $200.
No, I don't want any money. No. I'm really thrilled to have both of you guys here. Odocta, ONJJ Stone, IQMZ.com. Raising a Ninja. Are you still doing the Raising the Ninja podcast?
Yes, because I'm a horrible person. I have 3 episodes that I haven't uploaded, but I'll do
get
it this
going.
Week.
Get going. Get going. Put them on a hard drive, give them to John. Sneaker.
Drive them over.
And Mike Elgin at Elgin.com. And, of course, we're soon, once this COVID's over, and I think the vaccine is really on the way, which is very exciting, you're going to get back to being a gastro nomad. I am very excited. Gastronomad.net. Can't wait. We're ready to travel. Our show today brought to you by Forward Networks. I spent some time with these guys, and I am so impressed with what they did. They started. They were 4 PhD students at Stanford about 7 years ago, and they created a way to model networks in software. Forward Networks basically delivers you a digital twin of your network, completely accurate mathematical model in software. It can go out, it can survey the network for you automatically. It can build this, and then imagine what you could do with this software model. You can verify your network is configured correctly. You can verify that it's in compliance with policies, that it's behaving as you expect it to. And if you're considering a change in your network, and boy, I wish more network operators would use this, because how many times have people changed their BGP settings and brought the internet down? You could run the change against the software model so you know what's going to happen. This ensures your network is healthy and agile, and you don't get those embarrassing misconfigurations that can ruin your day. Here's some of what Forward Networks does. They have a dashboard that gives you key network insights, visualizations. We're looking at them right now on the screen that are easily consumable, exportable. You can automatically create an always accurate network diagram with full details about the topology of your environment. It searches network behavior, configuration, and state network-wide with an intuitive and powerful tool. It's basically spidering. You can perform end-to-end path analyses across your network, both on-prem and in the cloud. You can proactively identify potential connectivity violations. You can make sure your network is configured and behaving exactly as intended. And again, this is on-prem and in the cloud and with virtual overlay networks. You can set, check, and customize policies. And they has this thing, they create this thing called behavior diffs. If you've ever done a text file diff, you know what we're talking about. You create behavior diffs that'll give you side-by-side comparisons in one quick view of configuration file changes for any device between points in time. You can immediately see what's going to happen. 50% faster resolution of network trouble tickets, 90% faster fixes related to audit processes, 33% reduction in aborted network updates due to identified errors. imagine being able to, just like a Google search, search your network for what's causing problems. Some of the biggest companies in the world use forward networks. In fact, PayPal, they were having issues with their network. They thought they would build it themselves. Instead, they found forward networks, and they said, oh, look, all we needed was this software model that can find trouble spots, saves us time and money. They've worked with Telstra, Verizon, Bank of America, several large government agencies we can't name. Get network automation and verification for your intent-based network with Forward Networks. You're going to be so glad you heard this show and have and found out about this. Go to forwardnetworks.com/twit. Forwardnetworks.com/twit. They've got a podcast, Seeking Truth in Networking. Isn't that a great name? You can download it anywhere you get podcasts. Search for it, Seeking Truth in Networking, or go to forwardnetworks.com/twit. When they explained this to me, I was so excited. This is brilliant. Your business depends on it, and you got to see the demo. Forwardnetworks.com/twit. Try it. You'll be amazed. So who knew? Black Friday was yesterday, or it's Friday, and Cyber Monday is Monday. Adobe, this is one of their little sidelines, they every year they follow online sales in real time at 80 of the top 100 retailers, covering some 100 million SKUs. They said on Black Friday, U.S. consumers spent, the number is in, $9 billion. That's up 21% over last year. I guess that's not a surprise. We've been buying everything online more and more every year. Forecast was somewhere between 8.9 and 9.6 billion, so maybe it wasn't as high as they thought it was. It was, in fact, the second largest online spending day in U.S. history. But wait, Cyber Monday says, hold my beer. We'll see what it's like tomorrow.
Yep. It's all Cyber Monday now. I think Black Friday is dead for good, even when the pandemic is over. I think the days when people line up at 4 o'clock in the morning and then just go clawing each other, you know, and
thank
trampling
God.
Each other to
people
get.
People died.
Yes.
People got injured trying to get those crappy doorbuster specials.
That's right. It's a terrible way to do it because online you can comparison shop. You can, you know, and so I think it's all Cyber Monday now.
I wonder, though, somebody in the chat room said, and it's a really good question, why the long food lines and 21% increase in online sales?
I fully don't understand how that quantifies as real, because with massive job loss, or I guess the
who's spending this money?
Yes. Who? Because I was in Philly 2 weeks ago, and I was like, there was a line. This is not even a joke. There was a line 8 blocks long. When I got to my friend's house, I'm like, what are they selling at this store over there? He's like, what are you talking about? We drove back around, and it was a food line.
It's a food
line.
It
was 8 blocks long, and people were there with baskets of food for Thanksgiving. I'm like, it didn't even dawn to me that that's what it was. I just thought people were lining up to buy something. But
there are two things happening, I think. Yeah, there are two things that are happening. The first is that one of the interesting cultural moments we're in right now is a kind of lockdown fatigue. So after months and months and months of people spending a lot less than they normally would because of the uncertainty, because of the possibility of recession and job loss and all that kind of stuff, I think people are at this point sort of in this frame of mind of like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to spend some money. And the other part of it is there are new fears about a coming surge in the coronavirus, more uncertainty. You can't find toilet paper anymore at Costco. And people are also hoarding. So it's the pandemic fatigue. It's the Thanksgiving holiday. And it's a new surge in hoarding that is driving a lot of this stuff. Plus plus the holidays are coming. So I think it makes a lot of sense that people are spending a lot more. What I do think also makes sense is that when we look at the entire year, there's not going to be a huge uptick. I just think that the spending has been redistributed from the middle of the year to this part of the year, where people are just buying things they otherwise would have bought months ago.
I feel like there are two Americas now. There's the America, and I'm sad to say I'm in this. I'm not sad to say, but it's kind of, I feel guilty to say it. This part of America that's still making money. We're making a lot less. I think Twit made millions of dollars less this year, but we still make enough money to live well. And we didn't spend on eating out and travel, so we do have discretionary income. That's one half. But then there's the America. One in four Americans are suffering food insecurity right now. Out of work, out of unemployment benefits at the end of December. No stimulus check, no hope. Landlord saying you got to pay the rent. I feel like this is it's the divide between the have and have nots has never been more stark. And it's terrifying to me.
I also didn't think about, like, so me and my daughter, we go to the movies. We see every movie, even if they're horrible movies. And I was thinking to myself, you know, oh, I'm just going to buy a huge TV and then we'll just sit home because we're watching everything at home. Like, I have like 55-inch, whatever. It's not because it's not a big deal. I was like, I'm going to go out. I'm going to buy me an 85-inch TV just so we can sit home and watch our movies. I don't need this TV, but I was going to buy it. And now I think about it, that's the thing. Like, your money shifts, right? So the people that are still working and do have money, you're not able to go out and eat. You're not able to go out to a football game or a baseball game, or like I have season tickets at Sixers. Like, there's certain things you can't do. So you do have income shifts. So I guess people could spend more money because they got cabin fever. I didn't think about it that way, but that is something that probably happened a lot, obviously, because the numbers are so high.
I'm sure that's where the 26% came, but I worry about another 29% of households with children that don't know where their next meal's coming from.
Yeah, and it's going to get worse. There are going to be evictions. There was an initial surge in relief and forgiveness and so on for rent payments and for mortgage payments and all that kind of stuff. But that's going to come to an end at some point. Hopefully, there'll be politically driven solutions to that coming problem. But right now, we're not aware of what those are. So it's going to get worse before it gets better. But I also think that, Leo, you know, you shouldn't apologize for your success. You are doing your part because you pay your people a good wage. You are a great guy to work for. And so you're doing your part. If everybody did what you did, we wouldn't have these problems. But again, ultimately, I think it's political. It's a political problem and it's a political solution. Something happened. I saw a chart recently that something happened in, I believe, 1972, where the success of companies and the wages were about the same and they diverged.
This is an amazing website. And I did want to tell people about this. WTF happened in 1971.com.
71. Yeah.
And it was an inflection point. And yet 71, 72, you could see right here that prior to 72, compensation and productivity matched. Two lines going up together. Then all of a sudden, for some reason, this divergence, productivity continued going up and up and up. It's up 246% since 1972. Actually, no, but more than 100% since 1970, 250%. But compensation flattened out. This is what you were talking about, Owen.
If only there was some show that you could rewind and listen to the first 15
minutes.
That's
exactly what you were saying, Mr.
What a
baldy
genius.
With the hairbrush.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so camera. Yeah, wages. We need to fix that.
Wages were flat. But that's one very telling graph. But if you go through this whole page, graph after graph,
housing, the food,
everything.
It's the biggest scam in the world that rich people tell poor people it's not my problem. When we have corporate welfare, I'm not worried about John who's struggling to get food and needs a WIC card. I'm worried about Cook, who's got money out the wazoo hidden in other countries and saying, well, we need more tax breaks and we need more credits because we've got to build a spaceship in the middle of the forest that only occupies 2% of our company. But we need this spaceship because we care about the environment. Those are the people that are causing the problem. But, you know, America, the world.
Look at the consumer price index, because while your wages have been flat, the consumer price index 1971 all of a sudden through the roof. So in effect, your income's buying less and less. Not only is your income flat, but you're getting less and less. This is not, honestly,
I didn't get a power for my iPhone, so I know I'm getting less and less.
This is not a prognosis that has anything but but a nightmare at the end of it. I just don't feel like the future is bright when you see this kind of thing going on. Look at the national debt. 1970.
You know how to graph like this, Uncle Leo?
Huh?
You know how to graph like this?
How?
Rome.
Yeah.
Had a graph like this.
By the way,
Rome was amazing. It
it's
was
probably just
place.
A whole historical coincidence. But in the year 600 AD, the Antonine Plague, widely considered to be the cause of the fall of the Roman Empire. It was already shaky, and then a plague hit.
You know, all right. History repeats itself.
But
they had
hey,
the Black Plague. We had Black Friday. It's all going to repeat itself.
Here's the S&P 500 price to earnings ratio through the roof. And then suddenly it collapsed in 2010. I don't know what that's all about. This is a really interesting site. I'm not an economist, but I think whoever put this together, you know, found some interesting statistics that really make you think, wonder what's going on. But the really the most telling one is just flat income increase compared to productivity.
If I had to guess, I would guess that the number one cause of all of this is globalization, which we don't really we weren't really talking about it in the '70s, but it was starting
to happen. It was
happening, yeah. And so I think that globalization, as Owen was intimating, is something where you can play different economies off of each other. You can manufacture, you know, you can design it in California and then manufacture it in Shenzhen or whatever. You can manufacture it in a very cheap place and then sell it in a very rich place, and then you can mess around with all this kind of stuff. I mean, we complain a lot about the nature of commerce in the United States, but my God, you should see it in other countries, Leo. We travel to a lot of countries where the locals literally have no access to anything except the lowest quality, cheapest garbage you can imagine. Their soap, their blankets, their clothes, their shoes, their everything they see, everything they get is just the worst kind of toxic polyester garbage. And you know, so we've seen it actually happen in Morocco, for example, which has this amazing culture of textile manufacturing, Berber textiles and so on, and people selling it and all this stuff. Well, now you see those being replaced by made in China versions, knockoffs of like the traditional culture. And so that the sort of indigenous people, it's also happening in the Americas. Indigenous people are selling Chinese knockoffs of their own culture's patterns for pennies.
Right.
And I mean, it's just.
Where do you think all those MAGA hats are made?
Exactly. Or the Trump ties or the Trump. But it's globalization is kind of like one of the big problems. And I think we need to really start addressing the downsides of globalization. You look at, the politics of populism. I don't want to get in politics or name names, but basically the populism is essentially railing against lower wages being made, you know, stuff being made abroad instead of here. That's just the big tip of the iceberg.
It's complicated, right? It's really complicated. And I'm not an economist. And I mean, you can also find false correlations. People are talking about going off the gold standard. That happened. The number of lawyers per 1,000 people doubled from 1971 to today. Is that causation? The number, the incarceration rate.
Well, that's because we never got rid of slavery in America. We just
that's right.
Jail system.
Yeah,
they're making underwear for Victoria's Secret for 13 cents a day and brooms and other things to make. So, you know,
the share of 25 to 29 year olds living with their parents, the median age at first marriage. These are probably the effects of thereof, as opposed trends in obesity. The number of the growth of physicians and administrators in healthcare. I mean, this is a fascinating page.
So that's where the money's at.
Yeah.
I mean,
be a lawyer or be a hospital administrator. WTF happened in 1971.com. Doesn't have any answers, but it's a fascinating page to look at. Yeah, and I think that first graph may be the most telling one. So, yeah.
Can we also talk about some of the socials?
The social networks, the Twitters, the Facebooks, the TikToks. How about this poor guy? This poor guy. Here you got a millennial really coming up with a great idea. He worked at Sherwin-Williams. You know, every once in a while, customer would ask for some paint. He'd make a TikTok.
I said, say my name.
He'd mix some paint, put some nice music behind it. This is blue and magenta mixed together. He would take requests for color mixing. He said, you know, I thought this would be a good way to help market our paints.
And it is a good way.
It is a good way. Millions of people, 1.2 million followers, Tonester Paints. He got fired because he was making TikToks on the job. The company said it was gross misconduct, wasting properties and facilities, and seriously embarrassing the company or its products. Now, if I were Kelly Moore or Benjamin Moore or some other paint company, I would hire this guy so fast.
Oh, yeah. So, what they should have done is said, okay, you know what? That's your job now.
Yeah.
You're part of the marketing department, and you're going to make TikToks for us.
Yeah.
And they would have made bank because this is great marketing. Instead, people are going to be boycotting this company because they're so stupid.
Stupid.
They fired him because he was giving out the secret sauce, Uncle Leo. You can't tell people you all you got to do is squeeze in 2.7 ounces of red and 3.9 ounces of blue. You know I charge you $97 for this custom can of paint, and Marco just gave it away for free. Side note, anybody watching and listening, if you want to learn how to do anything that you want to pay an actual corporation for, everybody is dry snitching on TikTok, okay? If you want to know how to make these chicken wings.
Look at this. That's blueberries. He put blueberries in the paint.
If you want to know how to get the best deal on a car or a leased car, go to TikTok, type in car leases, and you will find out the world. People dry snitching on their jobs all over the place. Thank you so much, TikTok. Sorry for you, paint guy, but, you know, you weren't getting paid to make them anyway. So just, like you said, go on to somebody else and give out their secrets and hopefully hire into social media department.
This guy's actually a genius. I mean, the world of paint is so boring, and he made it really fun and interesting. And it's just incredible. Yeah, but I agree with you, Leo, that the competition should hire this guy and just let them run away with his great ideas. This is just fantastic.
Yeah. People saying, did he pay for the paint? In every case, he said, no, I was mixing paint for customers, and I just videotaped my job. I was doing my job and made a video out of it.
Sauce. Have you not watched the SpongeBob? Okay, there's a sauce. They're trying to get the Krabby Patty sauce. You can't give out the secret sauce.
Can't give out the Krabby Patty sauce.
Very important. That's why he got in trouble. Not foresight. But I mean, like I said, that paint's expensive, bro. You get custom paint, it's a lot of money. If I just go and buy this little $5 tube and another $5 tube.
He put blueberries in the paint to make blueberry color. Actual blueberries. Don't give that one away. Anybody could do that. You got to get that mixer box, though, that shakes it really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I saw him use a wooden stick, too, Uncle Lee. I mean,
you could use a wooden stick.
Whip it. Yeah, I mean, America.
Hey, our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. It's actually right up the alley of what we were talking about, which is internet service providers preying on their customers. Comcast, AT&T, they're actually collecting information about what you're doing and selling it on to marketers, making big money from spying on you. So we've talked about VPNs before for security reasons. It's a great reason to run a VPN. But there's also a privacy factor. You don't want people to see what you're doing online. You need to use a VPN, especially if your internet service provider's snooping on you. That's why I love ExpressVPN. Couldn't be easier to use. And now remember, if you do choose a VPN, they're going to have the same potential to spy on you as your ISP. You're just kicking the can down the road. That's why I only use ExpressVPN. These guys absolutely respect your privacy, so much so they invented a new server technology they call Trusted Server that runs only in RAM, spins up when you log in, cannot write to the hard drive. It's sandboxed and then spins down, disappears when you log out. There is no trace of you ever using it. And we know that's true not only because they have independent auditors, PricewaterhouseCoopers, checking their privacy policy, checking the trusted server technology, making sure it works. Not only because of that, but also because from time to time, law enforcement from countries with no knock warrants or no warrant at all will come and take the servers hoping to find evidence of things people have done on ExpressVPN, and there's never anything on there. They never have found anything. They don't log. So your privacy is 100% protected. Your security is 100%. Everything you do is encrypted and protected. And with servers all over the world, ExpressVPN is fast, but it can also put you in any country in the world, which means you can watch Netflix in the UK and binge all the Doctor Who episodes you want. Netflix in Japan and binge all the anime episodes you want. It's so fast, it works with HD streaming. It's easy to use. The apps are available on every platform. You can even put ExpressVPN on your router, making sure your whole household is protected. And you know what's great? It's so fast, they'll never even notice. Nobody's going to say, oh, wow, it's slow, but we're secure. You don't have to say that anymore, not with ExpressVPN. Your data is your business. Protect it with the best VPN on the market today. ExpressVPN.com/twit. It's the only one I use. Visit ExpressVPN.com/twit. Get 3 extra months of VPN free when you buy a year. ExpressVPN.com/twit. Protect yourself online, your privacy, your security, and watch TV anywhere you want in the world with ExpressVPN.
When you're in another country, there's so much content that is unavailable. It just pops up and says, this is not available right in your region.
Right.
And so
you use it the opposite way. As you travel around the world, you use it to be in the U.S.
Exactly. I mean, use it is an exaggeration. It's running. I never think about it.
Right.
But my Pixelbook is always in Miami, no matter where I am. And so everything, just all the content is just there. And I don't even think about it. It's just always running.
Your Pixelbook says, am I in heaven or am I in Miami?
Yes.
If you can find the world on Netflix, just put your VPN to England and you will get all kinds of stuff. You can get back to the data.
What else did you want to talk about the socials? Do you want to talk about
Twitter and using stories and their fleets? I don't like them. I'm grandpaing on that. I'm tired of stories on every single thing. I don't like it. I miss my Periscope Live when I could just see people actually going live and watch them. I don't want stories on everything, Uncle Leo. I'm tired of Snapchat invading every social network. By humbug.
Those fleets, besides having the worst name ever.
Oh, yes.
Terrible. I believe fleet is an enema. I may be wrong.
It is an enema.
It's an enema.
It is.
So
I didn't know that.
Well, now you do.
My favorite thing on Twitter is, check out my new fleet. Like, bro, don't tweet about the fleet. If I wanted to see your fleet, I don't need to. If you just tweet it then. You know what I mean? It goes by so fast anyway. I don't need that on Twitter.
It's a really dumb system, the way it works. It doesn't work in your browser. It's only on the mobile phone. And then the comments on it go into your messages. So now I did a couple of fleets, and then now my messages are blowing up with all these comments. And most of the comments are like, emojis of a heart or clapping or something like that. It's like such a waste of time. The stories on Instagram, except for the people who really abuse it and do like, 50 segments all in a row, is actually, it kind of works for that platform, but it's just not a Twitter-like thing, and they didn't implement it very well. So hopefully they'll either get rid of it or they will fix it, and make it work better.
You're going to fleet forever. I'm upset. Yeah. I'm just grinding on it. It just is what it is, but they're out here doing it. So, Leo,
I have airing of grievances as well.
And all this right. Get the Festivus poll there quickly.
Yeah,
go ahead.
You've already covered this because this is a 2-week-old story. But I'm really, really honked at Google for what they did with Google Photos. And I don't think that people are understanding how bad this transgression really was.
I will debate you on this. So, I will debate you. So the news story is, a couple of weeks ago, we all got emails saying, hey, look, we've been giving you free unlimited storage on Google Photos, but we're not going to do that anymore. Starting in June of next year, June 5th, 4th,
First,
everything you upload is going to start counting against your total amount of storage. And if you need more, you can buy Google One and you only get 15 gigs free. Everything you got there up to now, in fact, anything you upload now, all the way to June 1st, is going to stay free forever. Right?
Right.
What's wrong with that? They gave us a lot of notice.
Here's what's wrong with it. So, first of all, I have 22 gigs of photos and videos on Google Photos. But I also pay for the storage, so it's not going to cost me personally anything. But I have recommended Google Photos to lots of people, millions of people over the last 5 years. And so when they rolled this out, they said they were offering free unlimited photo storage, and we accepted them dragooning all of our loved ones into their facial recognition system. We accepted them compressing it so that when we download a version of the photo, we get a compressed version. It's not the original. We accepted buying into their ecosystem, all the stuff that we did, and we did it because they said it was free and unlimited. And we made a decision about where to put our photos based on the deal that we had with them, that we would do our part, all the things aforementioned, and they would do their part. It would be free and unlimited. And now they come along and they're saying, okay, well, now we're going to charge you. Now, the amount they're charging is actually very low. It's a low price. And I have the feeling it's not about the revenue from charging people for photos. It's more about getting you into their system with your credit card and all that kind of stuff the way Amazon does. Nevertheless, a deal is a deal, and they broke the deal. Now, we have many, many people have gigabytes and gigabytes of data. It's actually too much to download. People say, well, just go to Google Takeout. You can just launch a thing. So I've asked a lot of my newsletter readers if this works for them. And a shocking number of them have said they've tried it and it simply doesn't work for lots of people, including myself. You cannot download your own photos. You can download them one at a time. I have 22 gigabytes.
I've downloaded all my photos from Google Photos and was able to do it.
Some people, many people are able to do it, and many people are not. What happens with me, and I'm using a Google laptop, I'm using a Pixelbook, right? I go in there and I initiate the process, and literally nothing happens. It says, okay, we'll notify you. I don't even get a notification. I don't get anything. I don't get the download. I don't get, nothing happens. It doesn't work. They either have to, for people for whom this doesn't work, they need to send you a free hard disk with all of your stuff.
Okay.
Or as far as I'm concerned, this is technically a financial crime. It's bait and switch. They basically said, you know, people are taking photos with the knowledge that it's free storage, right?
Forever.
So people are taking 10 times more photos than they otherwise would have. And they've chosen this service that was free. And now they've got more data than people can download. And in many cases, the downloads don't even work at all. So I think this is something that really demands a lawsuit.
But if you don't upload anything more, if they said to me, oh no, now you got to delete it if you're not going to pay for it, that'd be different. But they're not going to count what is up there up to June 1st against any total. They're going to keep it forever. I mean, forever is a mighty long time.
Nobody wants half their photos on one service and half their photos on another service. I could go to Smug Mug and start, you know, using some other service. But, you know, I have these two things going on. It's just
really long thing. Yeah, but Mike, I mean, that's just because you should have just bought a hard drive and put them on the freaking hard drive.
I've been saying for a long time, people should have Wasabi, and I know they're not advertising on this particular show, Wasabi.
That's a cheap way to do it. Or just buy it, you know. I've after taking photos for 20 years, pretty prolifically, I have about a terabyte. I could buy a 2 terabyte drive for $100.
You gotta have them in the cloud also somewhere. Somebody could steal that hard drive, like what's his name, the movie director.
So got his stuff stolen. I'm in the dark because it might be snitching on people. I don't want people at Google to know I got a couple Google friends.
Nobody knows what's going on. It's we don't know who this is. It's some stranger.
Guess how many pictures with data.
He switches coffee to decaf.
How many pictures do you have on Google Photos?
I have 9 terabytes of pictures.
Holy cow.
Oh, come on.
You're the problem. No. You're the problem.
Every single photo that my dad ever took when he passed away, wow. I upload all those immediately. I do photography and videography. I do stuff for companies. Everything that I've ever done gets backed up in 2 ways, into Google Photos, and I also get a hard drive, and I back up, and I send it to my friend in California who puts it in a safe, so I got, you know, coast by coastal in case he goes off.
So you're good. You're good.
So, but Google right now can literally just – charge me whatever. I got to do it. So, I mean, Mike, I hear what you're saying, but they did get their stuff out. They said, hey, look, at this time, we're going to stop, but you keep everything for free. So if I stop right now, I'm happy with this 12 TBs I got sitting up here because I'm about to start uploading some more stuff. You know, I got current stuff I got to upload. But it's been a great service. I thank you, everybody at Google. I know I'm an abuser. You know, I don't want to get
anybody. Holy cow.
I worked that system to the boat. I also pay him a little $20 a year for 100 megabytes.
Ruth Porat is listening right now. She's making a note in her little black book. Find that Owen to OJJJ.
Hey, let me tell you something. If it's free, it's for me. They said free. I tested it.
It's free. You did it. You didn't break any rules.
I was doing 100 gigs a night. Every night I just had batches. And bloop. I wake up the next morning. It was done. Next day, bloop. Thank you, Google Photos.
I think Google does take a hit when they cancel something like this or change something. But honestly, you got burned. We all got burned by Google Plus, and there's been a lot of things Google's canceled. Google Reader. But come on. I mean, they were giving away a free service. If YouTube went away, I guess the one point you make that I think is genuinely an issue is you did give them these photos, which they got a lot of value out of with ML training. And so that was the whole reason for it, I'm sure, for Google's point of view. We want to train our artificial intelligence. So they got some value out of it. But I don't think it's unfair of them to say, hey, look, we can't afford to do this anymore. In 6 months, we're going to have to charge you a not unreasonable amount for cloud storage. But everything you put up there, including all of Owen's 9 terabytes, will stay there for free forever. Seems fair.
I can't be mad about that. I hear what you're saying, Mike, but I that's the one thing I'm not grandpaing on. If they would have said I had to pay for all that I got up there, oh, man, I'd be burning this house down with you. Like, I'd be right there with a pitchfork. But they gave me a time frame and said, now, again, I got to see what the price is because I'd still be uploading, so I got to figure out what's going on. But I'm thankful that my stuff is up there with the Google's quote unquote safe and sound.
Mike, do you feel like maybe you're kind of at the end of your rope with Google? Like they've burnt you one time too many?
I have. So here's the theme that this feeds into. Google is really unskillful. They have passionate users.
Yeah.
And time again, they launch a new thing and they say, hey, passionate users, check out this new thing. And then people get super invested in it. I've personally spent hundreds of hours interacting with Google Photos and I'm very invested in it. I have this thing called the Nice Book, which was my replacement for Facebook.
Yeah.
Where I've gotten all my readers to subscribers of this
thing. That's right. Yeah.
And I've gotten everybody involved in this and I've promoted it. I use it for Gastronomic Experiences. We take professional quality photos and then we share them through Google Photos. And so I've our customers of our business we've said you have to, you know, this is where all the photos and videos from this experience are. And so I don't mind that they have something that's free and then they monetize it. What I mind is they didn't tell us that at the beginning. In the beginning, they said free and unlimited, and they made everybody believe that this is always going to be free. Now, I've always been nervous about this because I know that people like Owen are abusing this horribly. I actually thought I was an abuser.
But now,
an unknown contributor.
Stop saying my name, baby. You're killing me, Mike.
See how many buses we can throw Owen under, but in one show. But you know, they should have said at the beginning, it's free for now. They should have been clear about it.
You're in the real world. You know that nothing is free forever necessarily. Everything is free for now.
We assume Facebook is always going to be free because they're monetizing us elsewhere. We assume that shipping on Amazon is free because they're monetizing it elsewhere. You know, they're not alone. There are lots of companies.
Prime prices have gone up. They told me Prime was going to be $99 a year. Now it's $119 and it's $129. Netflix told me that I was going to be paying $8.99 a month, and now it's up to $17.99. Like, things change, Mike. Things change.
The difference is that, yeah, but the difference is that you can just switch from being a Prime user to something else. It's like there's no,
What are you going to switch?
I can't get my own photos.
Walmart, two-day shipping? You ain't switching nothing.
Well, I'm trying to use non-Amazon sources for the things that I buy. I'm trying harder to do that, but that not for that reason. But my point is there's a heavy, heavy lock-in when your most precious data, your photos and videos of your family and all that kind of stuff, are being held hostage in undownloadable quantities. And in some cases, literally undownloadable because their mechanism doesn't work. And no, they don't have tech support. And you're just kind of stuck. Before I was a tech journalist, I was a regular journalist at a newspaper, and we used to do a lot of stories about local businesses that would do bait and switch. One of the first stories I ever wrote was about a motel in the town that I lived in that said, oh, it's $29 a night, and you could never get that $29 room. They'd get you off the freeway, get you committed, you waste your time finding the place, you go in, you park, you go inside, and they're like, well, those rooms are taken, but you can get this other one for $59.95. And they paid a huge fine for bait and switch. That's exactly what Google is doing. It's a bait and switch. They told us the deal was one thing. They got us all committed. And now they're saying, now that you're committed, we're changing the deal. And I think that people should be angrier than they are.
People are angry. There are a lot of people share your point of view on this.
But again, the theme is that they are unreliable and they take their passionate users and they crap all over them again and again. And so if you're an active user, like everybody who listens to this podcast is, you shouldn't trust Google as far as you can throw them. They are an unreliable company that just does not give a crap about you. And they're proving it once again.
I can't say otherwise. And I think that is really the big business risk Google seems to be charging into as they cancel projects left and right, is that people just have lost trust. And Google Stadia is a good example. I think a lot of people are very reluctant to go all in on Stadia. When you buy a game on Stadia, that's theirs. If Stadia goes away, that $60 I paid for Cyberpunk 2077 goes away too. I don't get a copy I can download and play on some other machine. That's it, right? So
I don't know, but it will go away if their history is any guide.
Right.
They all go.
Who trusts them at this point? Nobody, right?
This show's relations to Google and conversations to Google are all on mic. They do not reflect or inflect my relationship to Google. I love you. I run on Gmail. I don't run on Duncan. I run on Gmail. They do my business Gmail, my personal Gmail, my kids' Gmail. Everything is run through Google. I'm so thankful to you. Do not delete any of my stuff. I know I don't even want to download it right now. I just want to preserve it in case I get hit by a truck and my daughter needs everything in my life in one place.
That's true.
I thank you so much,
Google.
I, for
one, welcome our new insect overlords.
Yeah.
But seriously, you mentioned Gmail. I'm actually, Leo, this is the biggest thing that I'm considering right now. I'm trying to really think through all the implications, but I'm thinking about getting off Gmail and going to Hey, which I already pay for Hey, but I'm thinking of abandoning Gmail. And it's a little scary because I've been on it forever.
I abandoned them a long time ago. I actually moved to Fastmail, which is a service I pay for. And
yes.
And it's not cheap, but it's not expensive. I don't know. It's like $50 a year or something. But I feel like I want to support a good, it's better than Gmail, frankly, a good IMAP server and support it and trust it. Now, the thing about Gmail is there's not really any lock in on any email program. You can easily move over to another email program. You should not use a Gmail address or a Fastmail address or a Hotmail address as your main address. You should have your own domain.
And that's what I'm waiting for Hey.com is for Hey to have custom domains, which they said they are going to have.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, $75 a year or something like that. It is a little pricey, but it's pretty great. So I'm probably going to do
that. It's funny. I had a Hey account and I just said, screw it. And I didn't pay for it. But
yeah,
I don't feel like it was that good. I really like Fastmail. That's a really interesting. Yeah. I think you're right, though, that Google has probably harmed their reputation. Frankly, at this point, it looks like the only thing Google knows how to do is search and advertising. Yeah. And that's all the money comes from that. And that's the only thing they know how to do. And you can't count on anything else for any length of time.
Well, I blame Sundar Pichai, who I think has no vision, and he's just a clerk, and I think he's just really wrecked Google. And the founders, Larry and Sergey, they've totally checked out.
Yeah,
yeah.
They are
in their liveaboard airplanes and whatever. But let's hear from the sunglasses faction.
Speaking of social networks and stuff, man, Snapchat launches a TikTok-like feed called Spotlight, kickstarted by paying creators. I wonder if there is a story in that we could move to.
They're going to call it Meats, Fleets, Wheats, Teats. How about that?
Tweets.
Tweet. Oh, I can't use that.
At this point, I don't know.
Do you use Snapchat still? Is Snapchat anything anymore? Is that
if you're under the age of 18, Snapchat is your life.
It's still the thing. It's still the thing.
TikTok is it's that
TikTok, I believe. Yeah.
TikTok is like what you get to see, but the Snapchat lifestyle is a real like underground network of stuff that's going on with
behind
these kids.
The scenes.
Like, still snapping.
So you think they have a chance to go? I mean, one way they might have a chance, and maybe the reason they're doing this is it's still up in the air. The TikTok might be forced out of business by the U.S. government, in which case I can imagine creators saying, well, Snapchat's not a bad place to move to.
They can't stop TikTok. I'm not even worried about that. That's like such a pipe dream. That's like telling me that you're creating a school that's going to magically educate people, or you got a college degree, or you didn't.
I don't know. The U.S. government has some, you may not think they have some tools at their disposal. If the Commerce Department decides to cut off all the bank accounts and say nobody can sell servers in the United States to TikTok, that's going to pretty much put them out of business.
I've seen mayors and governors bow to the feet of protesters this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who would have thought that, right?
Don't understand the power of humanity until all of your children have knives at your throat when you come home. I wish you would cut off TikTok. You want to see mobilization?
That's true.
You want to see
that's a good point.
I wish you would cut these children at the feet, because Lord knows there'd be Lord of the Flies up in this piece within 2 days. They'd be all running rampant. Go ahead. Try it. Shut it down for 48 hours and watch what happens to the United States of America.
We may find out by the next twit. They've been given 1 week to sell off the U.S. business and avoid a ban. Of course, they were given 1 week back in August, but they've been given another 1 week. The Treasury Department told CNBC that CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S., had granted an extension to allow time to review a revised submission. Remember, it was Oracle with some help from Walmart that was trying to acquire TikTok from ByteDance. And then TikTok, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, said, hello, hello. Is anybody there? What happened? Should we still sell? And then CFIUS said, oh, yeah, sell. TikTok has no comment. I don't know what's going to happen. We're going to have a very interesting... This story from CNBC was published today, 4 hours ago. So we're going to have a very interesting week. But you're right. I actually hope it happens, Owen, because that will be something to see.
I just want to know. I can't imagine... Like, again, if you're in the TikTok universe, like my daughter, she asked me how to game the system, and her third video got 100-something thousand views.
Wow.
Now she's got stuff where she's getting 50,000 likes and views and things on, and she's got kids at school coming up asking her for a shout out. Like, the power of TikTok with kids, it's like amazing. Especially if you get your niche and you know how to play the game, like it's your viral ramp is much quicker and you get more opportunities to get shots at the top with TikTok.
So what do you think? Well, TikTok it seems like they've been trying to work something out.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting if they just said, go ahead, shut us down. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm sure some kind of financial deal is going to get put in place where somebody buys it or something happens. But just shutting down TikTok, I just can't even imagine it.
I can't
imagine what would happen. Riots in the streets.
Make for an interesting week. Hey, this show is going to go on for another hour or two. No, we're going to wrap it up because it's been going on and I don't want to keep you guys too much longer. We do want to, though, change the subject a little bit because we had a fun week and I had a special video I commissioned to illustrate what a good week we had this week on Twit, and I wanted you to watch.
Obviously, Ant must have an incredibly cluttered desk.
I also have this Westcott wipe here for my glasses. This looks like some sort of DVI to HDMI adapter here for some reason. There's also a quarter right here.
Previously on Twit. iOS Today.
If you are looking to try a new recipe app, then Crouton is a great app. So you stand your iPad with Face ID, and there's a play button at the top of every recipe. And I'm doing this right now. And if I tap on the I button, then I can wink to go to the next step and open your mouse to show the ingredients.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
I think there's six.
You might want to save that for a rainy day, young man. Some stamps. Yeah.
All about Android.
Episode 500. That's right. 500 episodes. We've been doing this show a very long time.
Eileen!
We're going to have kind of a rotating cast
Josh!
Of All About Android alumni
Victor!
Today.
Smart Tech Today.
Matthew Casanelli and I have some Black Friday tips for you. The things you should go after, the things you shouldn't go after, and how you plan to shop smart when it comes to the smart home.
This Week in Google.
I think this is a C-band, just in case I decide to get motion sickness while podcasting. My desk is rather cluttered, sir.
Twit. Unbelievable as always.
And there was no
my
Leo.
My desk is cluttered with a stack of
cards.
Oh, that's amazing.
Wow.
That would be a great new show. I wanted that to be a show. Like, just go through things. Like, look, I got a knife here. I got my controller. I got
what's on your desk?
Got a brush. I got some.
I got nothing.
I got some back freezy stuff. I got some beard oil. I got that'd be a great show. Just, what is on your desk? This is amazing. I got some Versace glasses. This is great. We should do that show.
It's kind of depressing because the week I took off was the best twig in years. So I feel. couple of obituaries, sad stories we're going to end the show with, but that's where I usually put them at the end of the show because we want to remember these people. Darth Vader has passed away at the age of 85. David Prowse, who was the big, tall guy in the Darth Vader costume, a 6'6" former bodybuilder. He was in the original trilogy, and he passed away at the age of 85. Much beloved. And then speaking of beloved, there is an entrepreneur who I think probably we all knew. We certainly all encountered from time to time. Tony Hsieh, he created Link Exchange when he was just out of college. Sold it to Microsoft for hundreds of millions of dollars. Took that money and founded Zappos in 1999. On one simple principle, the customer comes first. He sold it 10 years later to Amazon for more than $1 billion, continued to run it until this summer when he retired at the age of 46. Sad to say, Tony, who was beloved by our community, passed away. It sounds like it was a house fire.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is really on Thanksgiving, which is really tragic. If you want to read about what a great fellow this guy was, Om Malik has written a really good obituary at om.co. He, of course, knew Tony very well, but so did so many people in our community. I only met him once at a South by Southwest. He had a Zappos bust with a full bar that he was driving around Austin. It was so much fun. I'll never forget it. He was quirky. He was innovative. He was quite brilliant, and he really cared about customers.
And he also cared about his employees. The thing that I ranted about earlier, you know, hurts my heart even more knowing that somebody like him existed in the ether that gave so much and did it not just because out of the goodness of his heart because he knew it was right and he knew that it would make a business better. He knew that treating his employees the right way, treating the customers the right way. I mean, down to the little things. There was a story a long time ago about a guy who called Zappos customer service at, by accident instead of a pizza place. The guy ordered the guy a pizza for him anyway. Like the mindset of this man to instill from the top to the bottom is what I wish humane business would be. Yes, we're going to make a profit. Yes, we're going to make money, but we're going to do it by servicing the people that want to work with us and servicing the people that work for us. And if we started with that, if this guy, we could just multiply him and have him run everything, rest in peace, we would be much better off. He did an amazing job. He created an amazing company and culture, and he touched so many lives of people that worked for him, under him, that are going to go off and do other great things and hopefully take his lessons and his spirit and his essence with them into the future. So,
yeah.
Again, rest in peace, Tony.
My friend Jason Rapp tweeted about Tony Hsieh. Apparently, at one point, 13,000 Zappos customers' orders were one day late. He sent them an email. He still had the email, and Jason tweeted it. This is embarrassing. He made an apology and said, instead of your order being delivered July 8th, as we promised, it's now expected to be delivered July 9th. If this is causing you undue hardship, please call our customer service line. We will bend over backwards to make it right. If it isn't causing you undue hardship but is just extremely annoying, please call us and ask whoever answers the phone to do something weird or embarrassing, like sing I'm a Little Teacup or do their best audio impression of a cute little kitten. You trusted us and we failed. I mean, that's customer service. He often said Zappos is a customer service organization that just happens to sell shoes. He was very instrumental in the revitalization of downtown Las Vegas. 46, way too young, and a huge loss to our industry. RIP Tony Hsieh. And I think we should wrap it up on that note. I want to thank you so much, Mike Elgin, for being here. Even though you're in the dark, the lights are off, the furnace is off, there's no food on the table. I'm so sorry. No, everybody should go to Elgin.com. You subscribe to Mike's list. Are you still doing the Google Photos, Mike's nice book?
Book. I'm going to probably be moving it somewhere just out of a kind of protest. But I'll figure that out and announce whatever it is I'm doing because it has a few thousand people who follow that pretty regularly. But I would also like to let people know that this pandemic will end and we will travel again. So our first one is going to be Provence this summer, gastronomat experience, followed by Prosecco and Barcelona and Oaxaca.
Oh, man.
You say something about Oaxaca because we just spent a month and a long time in Oaxaca. And Oaxaca, you can't book anything for Day of the Dead in Oaxaca. That's the place. That's like Rio for Carnival, right? It's the epicenter of Day of the Dead celebration. And we booked the very best place to live. We booked the city's top chef to give a personal cooking class. We are going to have the most amazing Day of the Dead ceremony in October of next year. So if you want to do Oaxaca, this is the way to do Oaxaca. But I would encourage everybody to sign up because travel is coming. It's coming back. We're going to have a vaccine and we are going to travel. We also kind of specializing these days, Leo, in pandemic safe travel. So we've actually developed this thing called the Safe Travels Manifesto, which is we're hoping everybody will embrace this, and it's basically a long list of things it's a list of things to do about how to fly, how to go to restaurants, how to go to hotels and Airbnbs, how to travel without spreading the pandemic and without getting a virus. And so we're hoping everybody will embrace that.
Wonderful. Gastronomad.net. It is my dream someday to go on one of these. And you know what? Oaxaca next Halloween sounds pretty darn awesome.
It's so amazing.
I would love to do that. Owen J.J. Stone, not related to the guy who owns 9 terabytes of photos on Google Photos. He's not the same guy. It's just somebody with the same name. But
different guy.
Different guy.
I got to turn the lights off. Y'all keep saying my name.
If you work for Google, you'll find him at IQMZ.com, Inquiring Minds Media. And let me
something, Uncle Leo.
Yes. You got to always end the show. You know you're going to end the show. So
first and foremost.
Yeah.
I've been stressed out this year. I've been semi-depressed. I've been not happy. I know that. No, it's not. There's nothing.
We love you, Owen. We love you.
It's not that. Everybody's been this way. This year has been a rough year for everybody. I'm just saying, if I know if I'm upset, I know other people upset. That's true. If you get to me, you've gotten to everybody. But the end of the year is coming. The holidays are here. Don't look at the whole quarantine thing as a bad thing. So many times in your life, you've been too busy to spend time with your family or your loved ones or call and check on people. Right now, you have nothing else to do. Call that friend you haven't talked to in a long time. Send those text messages out. Make sure that you reach out and touch the people beyond social media that matter somewhat in your life that you miss sometimes, because right now they might need that phone call from you. They might need a message from you. And if you're home and you're stuck with your kids, I just order myself up. A Hello Chatterbox for my daughter.
Oh, good.
I also have her running on Code Kingdoms, because I still do believe in coding. So get one of those two things, if not both of them, for your kids. Get them educated for the future, not just, you know, because you're homeschooling. You might as well homeschool them for something that they might need to know, to teach them about some taxes or some banking and stuff like that. But spend this quality time together doing stuff that makes you happy and create new traditions. I didn't have a turkey this year. I made a meatloaf turkey, and it was delicious. We might forgo turkeys for the rest of existence. I don't know. So look inside yourself. I know it's been down, but we're on the way up because it's holiday season. Put a smile on your face. Do something that makes you happy for you, because that's all that we can do. I love you guys. I appreciate being on the show. Thank you so much for having me, Uncle Leo, and happy birthday.
Another twit. You say it.
This is in the can.
Doing the twit.